Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Block Podcast. Nathan Stacken here alongside my good friend and co-host, the sports director at KORN Radio in Mitchell, South Dakota, and the voice of the Mitchell Colonels, it's Travis Krentz. Travis, how are we doing?
I'm doing good. It was extremely hazy yesterday.
It was. I don't know if it bothers you as much as it does me, but there, and I shouldn't, maybe I just shouldn't give in to it, but there are a lot of people bitching and complaining about Canada and saying it's Canada's fault and like we should charge them and stuff for wrecking our Minnesota summers and, you know, Wisconsin too. Like there's legislation introduced to make Canada pay for what they're doing. And I'm like, are you guys that fucking dumb? Like, it's not like Canada's willingly letting their country burn and their forests burn just to make the northern states' air quality suffer. Like, it's not, this is what our world is with climate change and global warming and whatnot. You're going to get this more often. And it just annoys me that people are so stupid, or maybe they're just playing it, being trolls, you know, for the clicks. I don't know, but these people are real jokes.
Yeah, well, we could maybe help them by extinguishing these fires, because this never used to happen, and it feels like this is the third summer in a row where this has happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and yeah, maybe better forest management. Like, no! how do you expect them to get? There are parts that you can't readily access or get to where these fires are happening, but also it's with dry lightning. Like you just can't do anything. That's what it's come to here in this day and age. Look at all the wildfires in the western U.S. in the country annually, like in Idaho, Montana, New Mexico, Arizona, California. Should Mexico then like charge us because it's affecting their air quality?
Hopefully they're kidding, but these days you're not sure.
Yep, sure aren't. So yeah, it's been a bit hazy there out here, and likely will continue here for at least a few more days. Let's begin with how the tournament, the baseball tournament's going in South Dakota. You had to call several games here over the last week. How did that all go, and what are your thoughts on the tournament? What do you expect ahead?
It's been good. Was it 4 out of 5 days I had Brandon, so I guess a bunch of games because I'm off the rest of the tournament.
And you're thankful for that because that means you don't have to travel back to Brandon, right?
Yeah, or else, yeah, I'd have the next maybe few days off, but then maybe Thursday, Friday this weekend. Thursday, I did 2 games Thursday night. And Setup is all right. You're outside the press box. You're at the top of the grandstand. Sometimes it's really windy, and that sucks. I think the wind's the worst thing. And like they just don't have the room, I guess, for the media to host it, which sucks.
So you had to be outside then?
Yeah. So you're outside.
Because it was hot and humid for the first portion of the tournament, right?
Yeah, I thought it'd be way worse. Thursday, it was not bad. Friday afternoon got a little warm. That was the warmest of it. And then I got back Sunday. Had to go back, and that was good. Sunday was perfect. Yeah, Sunday night was perfect weather. And then last night was fine. Last night, again, it was really good. So it was not as nearly warm as I thought it would be last week with the warm weather. But yeah, weather's been okay. It's just been the wind sometimes. It's 20-25 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. You learn to adjust with your papers and your notes and things like that. So good tournament so far. My last couple games have been good. It was Alexandria and the Parkston Mudcats Sunday night. in the second round. Those are two teams that play every year two or three times because they're in the same league. And Alexandria's beaten the Parks and Mudcats 26 times in a row.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Is it just that Alexandria is that much better? Like, is Parkston really that bad? Or is it just, you know, like I said, is Alexandria really that good?
A little of both. Last time Parkston won was in the 2015 championship.
Oh, my.
And Parkston won for the first time in 5 years, first-round game. And they got up right away Sunday night. It was 3-0. First inning, they got it up to 5-0 in the bottom of the sixth, and you're thinking maybe they're going to pull off the upset here. And it was that morning that I looked it up because there's this app called Game Changer that all the teams use for their stats.
Okay.
And Alexander does a good job. I was wondering, okay, how many, you know, what's this winning streak? Because I know Alexander has been really good. When's the last time they actually lost to Parkston? And thankfully, I could go back enough to see it was the 2015 championship. Alexandria hits a home run, 3-run home run in the bottom of the sixth to make it 5-3.
Oh, no.
Ben Wilbur hit it. I think he just graduated high school, I think. Son of Matt Wilbur, the former Dakota Wesleyan men's basketball coach who left for the Phoenix Mercury, who is now the head coach of the Northern States men's basketball.
Oh, okay.
And Matt Wilbur was the acting manager on Sunday. So he puts his son in, and he proceeds to hit the shit out of the ball to left field to make it 5-3. Eighth inning, another guy, Pierce Smith, comes up. He hits a home run, makes it 5-5. Lead is gone. Top of the ninth, we're tied. Parkston gets the first two guys on. They're unable to score.
Oh.
And then Alexandria won 6-5, bottom of the ninth, on a single. So you're up 5-0 in the sixth inning, and they lose. So it's now 27 wins in a row for Alexandria versus Parkston.
Yikes. Parkston will rue all the opportunities I'm sure they had to put that game away.
Yeah, 5-0, could have been more. They had it. And then last night, Monday, did the Parkston Rays, the other one was the Parkston Mudcats, these are the Parkston Devil Rays, who are younger kids.
Okay.
Some of these kids are in college. There's some former Mitchell players on there.
Okay, and because when I think of Parkston, South Dakota, I think of Devil Rays.
Yes. Mike Devil Rays, I don't know how they came up with that. So this is their third year of existence.
Okay.
And the first time they've made the tournament. They took on Del Rapids PBR, who was the team that won it last year.
Okay.
And Parkston won 5-3 last night to knock them off. So that is by far their biggest win they've ever had in their three-year history as a team.
Okay, that's good.
It was 5-1 at the ninth, and then PBR got their best hitter up with a guy in first, where a home run would have tied it. And I'm thinking, okay, they're an underdog. You got to put them away. Parkston, the Mudcats couldn't put Alexandria away.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Parkston Devil Rays advance. So they take on Kimball White Lake, which is another area team. So two area teams play on a Thursday night in the quarterfinals to move on to the semifinals. So the Platte Killer Tomatoes play tonight versus Four Corners. So we still have four teams left. We'll probably have four of the final eight left. So last year, our tournament kind of ended early with the area teams, but this year, we probably have four of the final eight.
Not the case, and probably expected, right? What's been some of the biggest surprises that you've seen so far in this tournament, or has it been pretty, you know, straightforward, pretty chalky?
The Devil Rays beating PBR is probably the most noteworthy thing that's happened.
Okay.
In a first-round matchup, it was Winter Cologne and the Del Rapids Mudcats were both two of the top five teams.
Yeah, I think we mentioned. I think you mentioned that last week, that the winner of that game tends to go very deep into the tournament, if not flat out win it.
So poor bracketing there, and the winner Cologne lost 7-2, and they were ranked number one for numerous weeks in the poll. So kind of sucks for them that they get knocked out right away. So the there's been like 6 or 7 or 8 run rule games where if you're up 10 after 7, it's done. Mm-hmm. If you're up 15 after 5, it's also done. So there hasn't been really too many, the walk-offs. Alexandria and the Mudcats was a walk-off. Mm-hmm. And then the Rays hung on for PBR. So other than that, yeah, there hasn't been some blowouts, but as we get deeper in the tournament, you expect better games. Thursday night, Canova beat...
oh, bless you.
Canova beat Elk Points 10-7 in 11 innings.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Which would have been a huge upset. Canova, they're like, I don't know, maybe the Boston Celtics of amateur baseball, maybe.
Okay.
They were down 7-4 in the 8th, and Elk Point usually no good. So that was the third game of the tournament, and that would have been a big-time upset.
And this is single elimination, is that correct?
Yeah.
Do you think it would be better if this was a double elimination tournament?
It's all right. It's 32 teams, takes 11 days. Okay. Yeah. If they cut it down to 16, then but yeah, we're good with it. You just got to do a better job of making sure you don't get two top five teams playing each other. Sure. It happened a couple years ago with Canova and Alexandria playing the first round.
Mm-hmm. So. I was just thinking, like with baseball specifically, you play series, so at the bare minimum, it would seem like a state baseball tournament would be better to have that double elimination bracket, but that would be, with 32 teams, that would extend the tournament out a lot, one would imagine.
So there's too many teams in the tournament. You could maybe cut it down to 24.
Mm-hmm.
The top 8 could get byes, but that's too complicated.
Yep.
32 teams, that's the way it is. With Brandon, crowds are not as good because teams are not as close to Mitchell. They're as close to Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got a good facility and a good feel. Everything's nice, but it's just that drive. It takes like an hour 10, an hour 15 from Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of 5 minutes, it takes an hour plus.
But it will be back in Mitchell next year, right?
Yes. So we'll see, because Mitchell's had it for the last 7 years. So we'll see if Brandon is in the rotation where it's every third year, every fourth year.
Okay.
But that's the problem they're going to have is the crowds. So,
and they just haven't been as good this year as they have been in previous years when it's in Mitchell?
Yeah, it just hasn't been as good. Like Thursday night, if this was in Mitchell, it would be full. Because you have Alexandria versus Canova, which is like the Lakers versus the Celtics.
Yep.
And you have the Parks and Devil Rays, who've never been in this thing before, and they're 20 minutes away. And they take on Kimball White Lake. And they're Kimball and White Lake, 45 minutes west of Mitchell. So instead, they're going to have to drive 3.5 hours to Brandon back and forth. So,
yep. What do you expect for the remainder of the tournament? How do you see this playing out?
The Plant Killer Tomatoes made a surprising run to the finals last year.
Love that name, by the way. Killer Tomatoes. Yeah. Just fantastic.
Nobody expected that. And I look at Platt and the Del Rapids Mudcats. Those are the two teams. I would say one of those two are coming out of the bottom half of the brackets. There's a place in Platt that I think has a hat, so I'm at some point I would like to get a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Top half of the bracket, Alexandria, Canova, Parks and Devil Rays, and Kimball White Lake. Whoever wins between Alexandria and Canova is going to be the favorite. Parks and Devil Rays, they've got a pitcher, Jake Helleloid, is a former Mitchell colonel. He's going to be a senior at Northern State.
Okay.
And he's been tremendous pitching, so I would assume he will pitch that game. And if he pitches well, I mean, you know, Kibble White Lake will probably have one of their best pitchers. So, yeah, Parkston could win that. They've got their best pitcher going. They could make a run to the semifinals in their first ever year. That'd be huge for them.
Because they're the biggest at-large team, if you were to place betting odds on this, right, to win this? Or is there another team that would be even more surprising than the Devil Rays?
The bottom half of the bracket still got to get to the final eight. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, Parkson's got two good pitchers. I guess if you're ranking them, yeah. Maybe them and Kimball White Lake, that should be a really good game. I would like to have done that game. That would have been maybe a game I would have done. That would have been great. So I would say Alexandria, Canova, Del Rapids, Mudcats. One of those three are probably going to win this.
And it wraps up on this Sunday, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we will find out then next week.
They gave you $10 on their... They gave me a little $10 thing to use at the concession stand.
Well, that's nice of them, right? Unless the concessions are extremely expensive.
Yeah, they'll hand that out to us. I've gotten two of them so far, and I used one of them yesterday. So, well, I was going to use one yesterday, and they weren't ready yet with the hamburgers. It was 5 o'clock, and things don't start till 5:30. So I didn't get that. But there was a little concession stand behind the grandstand, so I went there. I didn't have to just use these 10 bucks a mile. Prices were fine. I ended up getting the big pretzel with the cheese. Ooh. The soft pretzel, got that. That was $4. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you got to use all $10 here. It's like, well, can't you just write on this thing?
Yeah, right.
Cross it off. And, well, okay, so. Because a meal, a hamburger, fries, and a drink would be $10.
Okay.
That wasn't open. So I got the pretzel for $4. I got a bag of seeds for $4, and $2 left over, and I got two tiny bags of one of Cheetos and one of Doritos. Well, I was always putting my $10.
Okay. Speaking of concessions, I went to the Twins game.
Oh, yeah. What was it, like 9-4? Was this the good game?
Yes, this was the good game. This was the good game. I suppose you could say Sunday's game was also...
A lot of good games.
Yes, a lot of good games. But my cousins and I do this game every year. One Friday night during the season where we all go there. They have all-you-can-eat concessions. It's included in the price of the ticket. Then there's a fireworks show afterward. But, so we go to this here. We eat... So it's all you can eat, hot dogs, chicken strips or chicken tenders, hamburger or cheeseburgers, peanuts, popcorn, chips, ice cream sandwich, pop water, and one of those like Johnny Pop little popsicles.
All right.
So you eat a lot there. It's not for the faint of heart. We have a little... tally sheet that we have right by us, and of the eight of us that went, it's eight. Let me no nine. Nine, excuse me. Nine of us went. No, I'm sorry. It is eight. Eight of us went. We totaled 132 different items between the eight of us. Now, some of that, like water.
You assume everything you get is at least $5. You probably ate $700 worth of stuff.
I would assume so, yes. Yep. The chicken strips or the chicken tenders were pretty good for concession tenders. The cheeseburger was a little more well done. I only had one of those. I had four baskets of chicken tenders, so it was like about 12 chicken tenders consumed. Had a bag of chips, had some nachos. Nachos are there, you know, just the chips and cheese. Three pops, four waters, and ice cream. A bag of peanuts. I gotta tell you, like, you gotta strategize when you do this here, because...
Can you bring home the bag of peanuts? Give me a bag of peanuts, yes. And then 2 minutes later...
Yep, I brought... Yes, yep, absolutely. I brought home a bag of popcorn for Noah, a couple bags of chips for Jason. So, yeah, you can bring some stuff home, but in terms of what I had consumed there, when you go to the peanuts and the popcorn, that takes just a lot to eat. It's salty. It's just filling, and you're already thirsty, and maybe just already kind of blah from all that food you eat. So we didn't really go with a ton of the salty stuff. It was more of the hot dogs and whatnot. But the totals were 14 hot dogs consumed, 11 burgers, 17 chicken strips, 6 chips, 1 peanut, 1 popcorn, 6 nachos, 24 of these Johnny Pop deals, 27 waters, 20 pops, and vanilla ice cream sandwich, 5 vanilla ice cream sandwiches, because it was hot and humid, so the ice cream's going to melt very quickly here. So we'll see if we can surpass that next year. But it's always fun to go to. It was nice to see the Twins play well. And I got to tell you here, you hit the nail right on the head with this with Luke Kuechel. This dude is phenomenal. He is the AL Player of the Week. He had 2 home runs, 10 RBI, over 400 batting average. He's the real deal. I think he's very exciting to watch. Hopefully, he can stay healthy and have a big year next year, because he's the real deal. He hit the game-winning 2-run home run on Sunday. So, yeah, he's just fun. Now, I am going to blame Audra Martin slightly for this. Yeah. Audra Martin, who does the Twin Sideline reporter. She also hosts Wild pregame and postgame shows on FanDuel Sports North. Very good at what she does, but she overdid it a little bit after the game when she was talking with Kuechel about, there's something special kind of brewing with this team. It's like, okay, let's back off here. They've won 3 games in a row. There's still plenty of games under 500. Like, let's not look at a 3-game win streak as, wow, look at what this team's doing. Look out for them the rest of the year. Because then what do they do the next night? They lose 2-0. Then, fortunately, they beat Kansas City 5-3 on Sunday. And for the week, 4-2 going against Detroit, taking 2 out of 3 from Detroit in Detroit. That's big. And 2 out of 3 from Kansas City. That's also good, but this team's not going to make the playoffs. And then you're going to New York, where I saw this stat. Going into the series with the Yankees, the Twins, just regardless, over their last 162 games in New York, they are 28-134.
That's all right.
That is unfathomable. Like, that a team could be so bad in one spot. I don't think there's any team out there with a worse record at any one stadium over that time frame than the Twins are with the Yankees. It's got to be a head thing. It just has to be.
I put $100 on the Twins to lose last night. I put $100 on them to lose tonight. I will not put $100 tomorrow because Joe Ryan's pitching something. Yep. And maybe Joe Ryan may get something done.
I have to tell you, he gave up a leadoff home run Friday night. It's like, oh boy, are we seeing another bad Joe Ryan game? And then he righted the ship right after that.
I mean, everybody wanted to talk about the Twins and how shitty they are. It's like, they're not that bad. They're not that bad. The players they got rid of don't matter. They literally don't matter. We've seen that now over 10 games. They're, 5-4? Now they're 5-5. And they're going to lose these games to the Yankees. And they got Detroit for 4 games this weekend. So if you split that, that'd be fine. Mm-hmm. They're just not that bad. It's like they're not any worse than they were with these guys. Because the guys they got rid of don't matter. So that's why I didn't understand why people were so nuts.
Yeah, you are
and crazy about all these people. 10 days later, we got rid of all these bullpen guys. They don't matter. these random. I've watched almost every game since, and I've not done that in probably 3 or 4 years because I don't care about the team, and now I am reinvigorated to see who's going to step up. Luke Keyshaw, I guess, he's one of these guys that's doing well.
Yes. Yep.
I think he could be an all-star next year.
Yes, absolutely.
Second base in the American League is not great. Great numbers to start his career. It's fun to watch because, it's all these younger guys, and you don't have Correa, and you don't have these guys on one-year contracts that you know aren't going to be around next year and are not a part of the future.
Well, and I got to think, like, Royce Lewis is going to be better next year. He's struggled a lot this year, and I think that's in part because of the injury. He just really hasn't gotten into a groove all season. And I know we've kind of talked about this guy before. I mean, is he exceeding expectations this year, or maybe the Twins have found something? But Corey Clemens is really good. I mean, he is he's hitting home runs. Cody Clemens. I said Corey. Cody Clemens. And there are games where he's not good, but I would say, 13 home runs so far this year. He's come through in the clutch in certain times, and he can smash the hell out of the ball. So if he can become a little more consistent at the plate, I think he could be a viable part of this team moving forward. So, I just thought it was a little bit of an overreaction by Audra Martin there to say, oh, there's something brewing or something special with this team. It's like, let's cool our jets. If they had won 6 or 7 in a row, then we can talk. But, playing the Yankees it's not great.
Because they played Cleveland after the trade deadline.
Yep. Could have easily swept the Garden.
Yes. They won one. They had the one game lost in the ninth inning or extra innings.
Yep.
So, they have not really been blown out in any of that. Even last night against the Yankees, they get down early. Buxton hits a home run. I think it was 3-2, like in the sixth.
Yep.
I'm like, all right. They're in there. But, I'm happy with this team. These random bullpen guys are thrown out there. It's like, hey, are any of these guys going to stick? You only have 3 starting pitchers at the moment. You have Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, and Zebby Matthews, who started last night. And 2 times they do these bullpen games. They'll have a bullpen game tonight. It's just going to be first guy's going to go like a couple innings. The next guy's going to go probably 3-4 innings. They're going to piece it together. And that has kind of worked out as best as I don't know when they're actually going to call somebody up. So, okay, you're going to be a starting pitcher here, and we're actually going to be serious about this.
Well, when is he eligible to come back?
It's a while. So it's like I don't know who they're going to call up or when they're going to call up. Again, a couple of these guys that they traded for, like Nick Abel for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Taj Bradley had his first start in AAA, did well. Like those, I mean, Taj Bradley would seem to be the guy.
Was it Merrick Houston who they got their first round pick? He was at the game Friday night, and we were a little confused. Like, why is he being honored at the game? Shouldn't he be playing in the minors? Because they showed some highlights of him playing minor league baseball after he got drafted. So we're just kind of curious why he was there on a Friday night.
Whether it was an off day or I don't know what, the lower league, wherever he's at, he's playing already.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, you bring your first round pick to the major league stadium, following the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his day. So I don't know why, if they had an off day or they just said, hey, we're going to do this during this homestand because this is the day that fits.
Well, yeah, I see.
This weekend, next weekend. I don't know, but he's had a good start to his, first couple weeks. So, I'm sure if he was, wherever he was, I'm sure they were playing, I would assume, because they've played games already. So, mm-hmm.
Mickey Gasper, not very good, but...
Is that right? Is that right?
Yeah, so I don't know why he's up here, but he is. But I got to tell you, that stash that he rocks a good mustache. He looks like he's the cousin of Mario and Luigi.
That's what I say. Yeah, we call him Luigi in this household. I mean, he's one of the worst hitters I've ever seen. You look at his AAA numbers, and this guy looks like an all-star. He's in like 300 and this and that. Like what? How does he do that there?
Mm-hmm.
But he is so bad up here.
Yeah.
And he was the catcher the other night. They tried him at catcher for the first time. They tried him for a sacrifice bunt. I think on Sunday, me, Drew, and Marcus, we sent messages within 2 seconds of each other all at the same time about how shitty he was. We're all watching the game. He couldn't get the bunt down. Message. It came literally within 2 seconds. 3 messages popped up. He couldn't get the bunt down. Mickey Gasper sucks.
That's great. That is great.
Like, if he was good, he could be a part of this team in the future and be a utility guy. And you'd play him at second. You'd play him at first. He'd be a backup catcher.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not. Yeah, he's not done anywhere near that. So, sucks for him because this is a big opportunity for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the rest of the season. Cody Clemens, when they picked him up, is like from the Phillies. This was a guy that I like. This guy's like a borderline not a Major League Baseball player because he's like a 220 career hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he's still hitting like 220, so that's not good.
Right, that's why I said he's a little more consistent at the plate.
Yeah, get them, and at this point he's been around for a while, so that's kind of what he is, but
he's got some tools. I mean, he can hit. He can smack the ball.
Yeah, so he can hit some home runs here. If he could hit, you know, if he could get you 15 home runs a year, maybe there's a spot on the team at, you know, second base and first base for him. So, I mean, yeah, the thing that people didn't – nobody talked about it. Nobody considered it when they made these trades – is that when you ship all these guys out, who immediately replaces them,
mm-hmm.
and who replaces them next year and in 2 years,
yep.
and it's not going to be the guys they traded for. It's going to, okay, Luke Keyshaw comes up, and he broke his forearm. He,
mm-hmm.
first couple games he played was really good 3 months ago, and he breaks his forearm.
And don't you kind of wonder now, too, like what the season would have looked like if he was able to stay healthy?
So you essentially get rid of Correa and replace him with Keyshaw.
Yeah.
Because Correa's still on his team. He's at short. Brooks Lee was at second. Keyshaw plays second. Brooks Lee moves to short. Maybe Mickey Gaffer is the guy that gets sent down. And you find room for Luke Keyshaw somewhere. And this change in positions is like, no. He's a second baseman. Leave him there. Brooks Lee's a shortstop. Have him be a shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you get rid of one of your worst players in Carlos Correa, and you replace him with the guy who has been your best player.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good formula to, you know, like win 4 out of 5 during that stretch. And there's still more guys that I want to see here by the end of the year that some that they traded for. So yeah, I'm excited, and they are playing very well. The pitching, the bullpen has been surprisingly good. And the hitting, they've had a couple games where they've hit the shit out of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been much better than anybody could have thought.
Yes.
They were a slightly below 500 team when they did all this, and they will probably finish as a slightly below 500 team over these last 50 games.
Yep, and so I will readily admit that I was dead wrong. You were right. I take my cues from you here the rest of the way. You're regarding the Twins, but yes.
If things come together, like, there's somebody, I think, for the Pioneer Press that, oh, Twins aren't going to compete for a while. It's like, I could see them making the playoffs next year.
Yes.
You got Joe Ryan, you got Pablo Lopez. I think Zebby Matthews is going to be pretty good. He had 9 strikeouts last night.
Well, we could see what Simeon Woods Richardson might be able to do. He's been better. We've talked about him.
If he's good, who fills out the rotation? Taj Bradley. McAbel, David Festa, all these guys we talked about last week.
Would you move over to the bullpen?
And somebody that you move over to the bullpen, whoever doesn't make it. And whoever is in the bullpen now, Travis Adams, who was a guy they called up early in the year, and it's another like, who is this guy? Why is he on the major league team? He's no good. When last week in one of those games versus Detroit, he had like four just perfect innings, just swings and misses out of his mind, and then it blows up in the fifth. But I look at him, I'm like, okay, could he be one of your setup men next year? And I would think he's probably going to pitch tonight three or four innings if he is effective. It's all about who's on his team next year. Yeah, all these guys coming up the next, you know, Kalen Culpepper, shortstop. Where do you put him? First-round pick from Kansas State last year. He's killing it in Double A. Walker Jenkins is a top five prospect in all of baseball. He will be up next year, 21 years old, I would hope. He's your future center fielder, maybe corner outfielder. And all these guys, it's exciting to see what this team is going to be, because if all of these guys are pretty good, this could be a really good team here. Yes. Very, very, very quickly, much more quickly than I think people. You got a couple more Luke Kuechels out there. Oh. You got them going.
He's got a big fan in me, I tell you what. I'm looking forward to watching him play the rest of the year, and hopefully he continues to be as good as he's shown here in this short time frame since his return from injury. Elsewhere around the diamond, we have the Brewers, who are on a 10-game win streak. They're looking really, really good. It's amazing, you know, how the Cubs were out ahead in this NL Central race for a while, and the Brew Crew lately have just been on fire. And you look at the standings, and they are 6.5 games up on the Cubs. And with the way the Brewers are playing, I get it. Baseball, things can change in a hurry, and you never know if a big losing streak can happen to the Brewers. They go in a little bit of a slump. But this 6.5 game lead that they have seems a little insurmountable right now for the Cubs. But the Cubs do have one of the easier schedules remaining, so that is a benefit to them. But the Brewers, wow. Is this sustainable for them not only the rest of this year, but come playoff time? Because that's where they have faltered here, especially last year against the Mets.
I worry they are peaking too early here, because we are in, you know, not quite the middle of August. They are 30 games over 500 right now.
Mm-hmm.
They are 6.5 games better than the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the people thought the Dodgers would be. They're 74-44. They've won 10 in a row. They had an 11-game winning streak earlier this year.
Yes.
So they've had two streaks of 10, which has not happened very often.
And that was just recently, too, like, because they lost a game against Seattle. I think that was only like three weeks ago or something.
They won like, you know, 29 or 34. It's a hell of a streak. Say, is this a collapse, or this is not a collapse, because since Memorial Day, or since May 25th, you know who has the second best record in the National League?
The Cubs.
The Cubs. The Cubs have the second best record in the National League since May 25th. They have lost 12 games in the standings since then.
That's amazing.
So they can't, you know, their Cubs are fine. It's just the team behind them are putting together, you know, the best run in team history at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that they're peaking too soon here. They're starting to, their pitchers are great.
Mizorowski's
the average guy couldn't name you two hitters that they've got in the lineup. You know, this is a no-name lineup that there's no big stars. You know, Christian Yelich.
Yep.
He's having a good year. That's the name people would know. Everybody else is like, who is this?
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Chirio's out for about a month. He's their big prospect, and he's having a good year. But they got a lot of guys that are like, okay, how's this guy going to do? Isaac Collins. They got Bryce Terang, who's a nice player. Sal Frelick, who's a young player. All these guys that are having good years. The trade deadline, one of the best trades of the trade deadline ended up being way early, weeks before the actual deadline. It was Andrew Vaughn going from the White Sox to the Brewers. And Andrew Vaughn has already all of a sudden turned into goddamn Mo Vaughn. He's hit 7 home runs in 26 games. He's hitting .352. He's at 29 RBIs. And he was a prospect, and somebody thought the White Sox would be good like this. And then he was with Chicago for a few years, and he just wasn't any good. Mm-hmm. And then they trade him to Milwaukee, and all of a sudden he becomes good. So he'll back off a little bit here, but he has produced more for the Brewers in a month than he did with like 3 years with the White Sox.
Yep.
So they got a lot of guys that nobody's ever heard of that they're putting it all together. So this is a team. Everybody's rowing the boat here. So there's not like one guy carrying this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's an offense that's not spectacular, but it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And the pitching, our guy Mazeroski is going to be out for a while, which is fine, because with the pitch counts and the inning limits, it's like they were just going to throw him out there for 4 innings,
yep.
You know, every once a week. Well, how about this? How about you don't pitch him until like September 15th?
Yeah. Yep.
So when the playoffs get here, he's ready to go.
Yep.
Their bullpen's really good. Freddy Peralta is their ace. He'll start game one of the playoffs. Quinn Priester is some guy that is good now. It's like they're getting contributions from unlikely sources.
And speaking of leads that appear to be insurmountable, all of a sudden the Phillies have grown their lead in the NL East to 6 games. That's because the Mets are 1-9 in their last 10. They've lost 7 in a row. The Brew Crew swept them over the weekend. Given what the Phillies did during the trade deadline, getting Duran, it was Bader, right?
Yep,
Bader went there too. The Phillies, already a very good team, but they look like the team to beat in that division right now, because the Mets just collapsing here. And, you know, you're looking at this here, that the Phillies have a 6-game lead over the Mets. And the Marlins had a golden opportunity last weekend to gain some ground on the Mets, but they lose 4 out of 5 to the hapless Braves this year. And it's like, okay, well, maybe the Marlins, it was fun while it lasted, and they're not going to, you know, be within striking distance of a wild card at all. So, I mean, that's the bad news, is that the Marlins lost 4 or 5 and had a chance to gain ground. But the good news is they haven't lost any ground on the Mets. They're still 6 back of the Mets here for that wild card, and they're still within striking distance. So for the Marlins, it would have been nice if they could have won at least 2 games in that series against the Braves, if not 3, and gain a little more ground. But the Mets haven't done anything here, so the Marlins kind of stay where they're at. Is there some real concern, do you think, that the Mets are going to miss the playoffs here? Because this is quite the collapse they're on right now.
Yeah, they got to pick it up here at some point. Like they've been really hot and they've been really cold. They got to find something in the middle here. They're 2 games up on the Reds. At some point you would think they would figure things out here. But, yeah, between them and the Reds, even the Cardinals are only 3 back. So, yeah, the Marlins, they've got 7 games left versus the Mets, including the last 3 of the year, which those probably won't mean anything for the Marlins. But I guess the frustrating thing for the Marlins is that they've a really good run, and they're one of the, you know, more surprising teams now. They're still 4 under .500.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like they're going to add any pieces in the offseason. Because we've seen the Marlins, you know, the Marlins have won 2 World Series, and they've been good in stretches here. But they never add to the team. It's like, okay, we're ready to win now. Let's add to this team.
Yep.
But they don't usually do that. They did, you know, 20, 30 years ago. They made some moves, but I don't expect the Marlins to be somebody that is going to be the big off-season winner. It's like, well, you've got some guys that have exceeded expectations, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's just not going to happen. So that sucks for them. That, it's like, well, are they going anywhere, even if they are, you know, better than people thought they were?
Well, maybe they'll spend a little bit of money. One would hope that would be the case, but we'll see. The Dodgers They are only a game up on the Padres. Padres are playing really good baseball right now. The Dodgers, well, I mean, they're hanging in there. They did take 2 out of 3 from the Blue Jays over the weekend, and probably, you know, they were close to sweeping the Blue Jays, which I think would have been a pretty big statement given how well Toronto has played. But the Dodgers are just a game up now, so we'll see if the Padres can overtake them. The Blue Jays are still up 4.5 games on the Red Sox, 6 on the Yankees. The Yankees continuing to struggle, but thank God the Twins are in town here, so they'll get at least 2 wins, if not 3, in that series, and we'll see if that can boost them at all. But the Rays have fallen back. The Orioles aren't gaining any more ground here, so we can forget about the Orioles. So it's really down to a 3-team race in the AL East with the Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Yankees. But I think until Judge comes back, the Yankees, they just got to...
He's back.
He is back. Okay, well, that's good. Okay.
DH at the moment, so we'll see if he's able to play me out. I don't think he will be. I haven't paid close attention to it, but yeah, he's the DH now.
So. The Guardians are only 6.5 back of the Tigers, and the Tigers will hopefully...
oh, my goodness.
They should be fine, but, you know, given how big of a lead they had, all of a sudden, I mean, it was like, what, 12 games? Like,
I think it was like 15.5.
Yeah, and now all
I saw it was, if Cleveland makes this comeback, it'd be the biggest ever.
Yeah.
Like, the record's like 14, and they were like 15.5 back at their worst. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Cleveland was, or Detroit was so good. And, you know, Cleveland, they were kind of sellers at the deadline. And
but they kept Kwan. That was one of the better trades that wasn't made, was Cleveland keeping Kwan.
And now they're a game behind the Yankees. So Cleveland, they're just kind of always around, and they're always better than projections think they're going to be.
Yep.
Yeah, you've got, you know, Yankees, Cleveland, Texas for those last 3 spots. That's kind of where I think you draw the line there.
And heck, I mean, Seattle's only a game back of the Astros for the AL West. The Mariners have won 9 of 10. They've gained 4 games on the Astros in the last 10 games. They're on a 7-game win streak right now. Those trades that they got from the Diamondbacks proven to be good. They, of course, Cal Raleigh still leading the majors in home runs. I think, he hit his 45th home run the other day. So the Mariners are playing good baseball here. Do you think that, because I thought this was done, I thought the Astros were going to take it. The Mariners just wouldn't be able to have enough firepower to overcome and overtake the Astros. Do you think the Mariners can complete this comeback here and overtake the Astros and win the AL West?
I'm not so sure they're making the playoffs.
Okay.
I mean, how many times have they been? They've been there. It's yes. Like, all right.
Yes, it's why I'm hesitant to ask the question and believe. But the fact that they've won 9 of 10 does indicate that hey, that there's something going on there. What did they sweep the Rangers not too long ago or won 3 out of 4?
That was big. Yeah.
They swept the Rays this weekend. So that's it's not that significant, but they're winning the games that they need to while the Astros are kind of fumbling around here, even though they had a good, they took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, they played, Oakland and the White Sox and Tampa Bay and the Angels. They've had a good schedule. Now it's, you know, they've got the Phillies and San Diego left. They've got Cleveland. They've got Houston one more time. They end the year versus the Dodgers. Yeah, so hopefully that Dodgers series isn't important for them. I mean, that's pretty good. As far as the interleague series to wrap up the season, Dodgers-Mariners is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Mariners have just disappointed too many times.
Yep.
For me to say, they got to prove it to me here. They got to at least get to the playoffs here. I was talking to somebody yesterday. I'm like, why doesn't baseball do what football does with the like your last game, your last series of the year, that last week should be all division games.
Well, they wouldn't be able to, though, because there's...
Well, there would just be one, one series, at least, one series have to be an interleague.
Yep.
But everything else could be within the division, and a lot of the time it seems like week 18 of the NFL is pretty boring because there's nothing going on. It's like, okay, what's the Sunday night game? What's the most important game? Mm-hmm. And last year was Vikings-Lions, and that was a shitty game.
Yep.
And a lot of the time it's like, well, a lot of these divisions are done, and week 18 is not very exciting, I don't think.
Yep.
So you've got, you know, Dodgers, Seattle. Well, that's, I guess, you know, on paper you were talking both teams should be good. I think the Twins end with the Phillies.
Yes, they do.
So that's a weird ending for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why don't you do, you know, Padres, Dodgers? That, you know, one would think that might be an important series, or Mets, Phillies, or, you know, Braves, somebody, Cubs, somebody, like somebody in the division here. To you know, in one of these years, this might end or might decide the division instead of saying, now we're going to have Houston play Milwaukee, or Houston play Pittsburgh. It's like, well.
Yep.
Also, one unbelievable stat. Go to the, if you've got access, check out, or on ESPN or wherever, check out the Phillies schedule. Right now, I would, the Phillies would be my World Series pick. I think they were my pick last year. Check out the Phillies' recent schedule and see if anything pops out.
Okay.
At you. It's set a record. Their recent schedule over the past 3-4 weeks set a record.
Well, let's see. I'm going
to guess. Played Texas. They got Baltimore, Detroit, played the White Sox, played the Yankees, Red Sox, Angels, I guess, since the All-Star break.
All American League teams.
21 games in a row they have played against the American League.
What? That's so weird. Why would
every game in the second half is against, for so far, that ended last night against Cincinnati.
Yep.
That is a record. Nobody has ever played 21 interleague games in a row. They've got Seattle and Kansas City left, and they got the Twins. So they've got three more series. I don't know why baseball did that, to say,
well, that's definitely a schedule quirk that we talked about. And is that one of the things, you know, that you despise about the NFL schedule, is that, you know, they might like the NFC North would play four consecutive games against the AFC. Is that the equivalent of this? Like, why would you do this? Or is this a kind
I don't
of cool
know
thing?
Why you wouldn't spread these out a little bit. What, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight series against the other league.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, you could play 2 in a row or maybe 3 in a row. Let's see, first time they played an American League team was May 6th. Their 35th game of the year.
Yep. I was just going to check that, too. How many?
And then they didn't play, and then they played Oakland. That was 53 games into the season before they played their fourth game against the other league. It's like, how about put a couple more American League teams in that first month? Well, I guess that's the way it goes.
Yeah. That is
21 in a row.
Definitely bizarre. Anything else baseball related we need to get to?
We're coming on the baseball playoffs here. We got a couple weeks to go, so we're getting excited for that.
In the fantasy playoffs, is that what you
mean?
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
And how are you looking?
My SV league, I had a bit of a rough stretch. I'm back up to 15-5 now. I feel like I have a team to win this league. I have the one seed at the moment, tied with somebody else.
Ooh.
I feel like this is. It's been a couple of years since I've had a good team. I don't think I made the playoffs for a couple of years, but this is a good team that I have this year, so let's make that count. And in my much more extensive CBS league, I think I'm the 4 seed. It's the best offense I've ever had. I've been in this league for, 4 years, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
My pitching is taking a dip for whatever reason, but my offense is the best it's ever been, so I'm excited to see if those guys show up in the playoffs. So we got a couple of weeks to go for that.
Good luck. I hope you secure the one seed for sure in the Dust V League and can make the playoffs.
Also, the Angels are 4-0 against the Dodgers this year.
That's so quirky. Just so quirky. Good. We like to see that the Dodgers.
Currently, the plane. We'll see if the Dodgers can avoid a season sweep. This weekend, you've got the Reds hosting the Brewers. You have the Mariners in New York to take on the Mets. And you have Padres-Dodgers coming up this weekend.
Big series.
The Reds, your Reds.
Yes.
Having a good year.
Very frustrating. They're very up and down.
They're two games back here. They've got, and Hunter Green's going to come back. Chase Burns, depending on who you ask, maybe the number one pitching prospect in baseball. Chase Burns. Mm-hmm. He's come up, and he's kind of been up and down.
Yeah, because didn't he strike, wasn't he the first pitcher ever to strike out five consecutive players to start his big league career or whatever against the Yankees, if I recall.
Yes. Correctly. Yes, it is. That's what happened. And his ERA is over five. His strikeouts. He has 57 strikeouts in 34 innings. So he can strike him out. He had 10 versus Pittsburgh on Friday night. He had 10 versus the Dodgers a couple weeks ago. He had 10 versus Washington. He had 10 versus Colorado. So four out of and then he pitched in that Braves game at the racetrack, and he went one inning, and the rains came. So really, his last four starts, he has struck out exactly 10 guys in all four of those games. So he is excited. If the Cincinnati Reds can get into the playoffs.
Oh, yes.
They've got this guy. They've got Hunter Green, who's now been around for a few years. You would call him a veteran. Andrew Abbott, who nobody's heard of, who's a really good pitcher.
Who did finally Andrew Abbott?
He's got a hell of a shit mustache. He's got red hair. Finally made the All-Star team after he should have made it initially. Nick Lodlow. They got four potential. They got some pitching in Cincinnati. So I mean, you deal me in on the Cincinnati Reds.
Very good. I like to hear that.
Don't know if they're making the playoffs, but I like what they got going on here.
Let's switch gears to the NFL. First week of preseason football. How much of the Vikings did you watch?
The first series, and then I'm not keeping up with this. So I thought the quarterback was going to play much more than he did, but apparently he didn't.
30 yards, and one rush for 8 yards. He got through it unscathed, healthy. That's most important. Again, Jefferson's not playing. Some other starters aren't playing. All in all, encouraging for McCarthy. It's going to be a work in progress throughout this entire year. So that's good. Very unfortunate news regarding Rondale Moore suffering a season-ending knee injury on a punt return. He was going to be their punt returner, so the Vikings now will have to look elsewhere. And it was on one of the hip drop tackles or whatever that they're trying to get rid of. So that's very unfortunate there. The Vikings beat the Texans 20-10 again. Not too much there. This Caleb King, he looks like he could be pretty good on the defensive side, the linebacker. So we're not going to take. We're not going to be too high on McCarthy, not going to be too low on him with what he does in the preseason.
Really fucking playing. It's like, right. Christ.
Right. I mean,
like, wouldn't you want to get him out there a little bit? It's like,
yeah, you.
I mean, that's his. I think I said this a while ago, watching an old game. I think it was Dan Dierdorf, or our guy, Dan Dierdorf.
Oh, yes.
Like a Monday night game, had to be a Monday night game.
Yeah, for Frank and Al.
Yeah. Some quarterback, it was like, first game of the year or whatever. Some quarterback, he was worried about if this guy was ready for the season. Because, he'd only played 6 quarters in the preseason. Like, is he ready to go? No, he only played a game and a half.
And now we're talking about these guys, 6 drives.
Like they don't play at all, and I don't think J.J. McCarthy's going to play again in the preseason. So it's...
Well, and so that what's kind of interesting about that is that we have seen the Bengals in recent years not play their starters, and they get off to historically slow starts. I don't think that's going to necessarily be the case with McCarthy and the Vikings, because I trust KOC, but that is something to keep in mind. The Bengals did play their starters for at least two series Thursday night against Philadelphia. Two touchdowns, Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase. There, two touchdowns, I guess, on two drives. One of them to Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, he looks as good as ever. So I, you know, we'll see if the Bengals playing their starters changes how they start the season, because they have gotten off to historically slow starts. Remember, they lost to the Patriots last year, 16-10. At home, like that was, and then they were started out 1-4, and by the time they got hot, they just couldn't ultimately make the playoffs. So, again, we're not going to be too high or too low on what McCarthy does in the preseason, but just as long as he's continuing to get better throughout camp, and he's going against a blitzing defense, so he's going to see a lot of stuff in camp that he's not going to see during the NFL, and that's going to prepare him better, one would imagine. But I got a couple other. Couple other quick hits for you from preseason here. Just some things to keep in mind. Anthony Richardson dislocated his pinky, but it's a clean dislocation. No surgery is needed. But already Anthony Richardson hurt for the Colts, so you know he'll come back at some point during the preseason and should be ready for the opener. But that gives the opening for Daniel Jones, our boy Danny Dimes, Frank Jones, to take the reins here for the Colts. We had two ties in the week one of preseason. Vegas and Seattle tied at 23, and the Dolphins and Bears finished tied at 24. We had a significant, we had a game that was called early in the fourth quarter because a knee to the helmet, and someone seized, what is it, Marcus Norris of the Lions. I believe he's a safety. He had to leave on a stretcher, ambulance. They went to the hospital. Both Raheem Morris and Dan Campbell agreed to just, you know, take knee and just say, we're done with this game. It was the fourth quarter. No sense in anything getting worse, but an injury forced a game to end early, but by all means he's in the concussion protocol. Norris is, but it sounds like everything is going well. We had a what would have been a record-setting field goal. Cam Little from the Jacksonville Jaguars hit a 70-yard field goal Saturday night against the Steelers. Did you see this?
I saw this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible. 70 yards. I don't know. Conditions had to be just right. But that's something to keep in mind, too, for Jacksonville. Hey, you got a pretty strong-legged kicker there.
It seems like 60 is not a big deal anymore.
No, it does not.
No. We are, before, we're like, well, this will be the biggest kick of his career. Now it's like, well, like you almost expect him to make it if it's 60 or under.
Yes. Yeah, well, 50 for sure. It's like 50, you know. Back in the day, 50, 52 yards, is like, oh, I don't know if they'll have enough leg for this. And now it's like anything under 55, you expect them to make. But those are the big takeaways. Amar Johnson got a touchdown for the Packers. He's trying to make the squad. I guess the real take. Oh, and then the biggest story from week one was Shedeur Sanders and how well he looked for the Browns. Played spectacular. We don't know how much that will affect him moving up the depth chart, but he answered a lot of the critics. Again, it's a little difficult to read, though, from the preseason because he's not going against starters, so what does that all mean? But a good start to his career to kind of silence people for at least a little bit. Shedeur Sanders throwing two touchdowns in that game against Carolina for the Cleveland Browns.
Good quarterback in college is good quarterback in NFL.
Yep. So we'll see. Maybe he was humbled enough and he's putting in that work, but that's a good sign there for the Cleveland Browns. Anything big here this week, week two? I don't really think so. We'll see what happens. Patriots and Vikings doing joint practices, so ahead of their game on Saturday. We'll see if anything comes of that. But, the preseason football's here. Means we are one step closer to the regular season.
We're like on a baseball schedule, it's like February 28th.
Yes. Yes.
So like months ago.
Yep.
Yep. All these football games actually.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with Micah Parsons, if he's going to continue to hold out, and if the Cowboys ultimately will trade him. Jerry Jones continues to bungle.
I bet we sign him and he plays in week
one. I don't think he will play in week one. That's just my... he might play for the Cowboys this year, but I don't think he will play week one.
Hey, just pay your guys. Pay.
Yep. So that's the football there. Of course, we got college football gearing up here. Charlie Hill, Charlie's joined last week. He'll join this week, too. We're previewing the season. Anything from college football that's catching your attention thus far?
I should take this next week off of work here and go through. There's one team I like for the playoff that they were a good team last year. They're a team that you hear about that people pick. So, oh, this team could make the playoff that you don't think of as teams, but it's like, okay, it's like, you know, you look at their conference, you maybe put them at, I think, 4 or 5.
I kind of think the Big Ten is a little deeper than the SEC this year. Like, I feel like there are more teams in the Big Ten that have a better chance at making the playoffs than in the SEC. A lot of quarterback changes in the SEC that I think is going to that could be difficult for teams to navigate through.
Alabama named their starting quarterback.
Yep, Ty Simpson.
Yeah, so he's there. I'll see if they get better. And Texas is number one, I guess, for the first time ever in the AP poll, which I found surprising. Like, Ohio State doesn't have quarterbacks. I don't know why they're number two.
Well, they're number two in the coaches poll, but number three in the AP poll, I believe.
And they go to Texas, Ohio State, week one.
Yep.
I would think, is that game at Ohio State?
It is at Ohio State. Yep, on Fox.
I would think Texas wins that because I don't know who the Ohio State quarterback is going to be.
But we haven't seen a ton from Arch Manning yet. That's going to be a real big test.
I think he'll be good.
If you're looking at this week one for college football, I don't remember a time in week one where we've had as many good, like, monster games as what we're going to have. We're at noon on Saturday, you get Texas at Ohio State. Then on Saturday night, it's LSU at Clemson. And then Sunday night, Notre Dame at Miami. I mean, these are all three, like, top 10 clashes. This is going to be a hell of a great Labor Day weekend.
It's a good slate. Yeah, Lincoln Keenholz from Peer. Like, he's either going to be the starter or the backup. I would imagine he's going to be the backup. But if a kid from Peer is a goddamn quarterback for Ohio State, yep. Like that.
Yep.
I think he's a junior now, but still, Jesus Christ. So.
Yep.
Yeah, it's who's the top 10 team that's not going to be very good? Who's going to win the Florida State and Texas A&M Award, the Jimbo Fisher?
Yeah.
It's called the Jimbo Fisher Award.
let's see here. And I need to look at the top 10 rankings here. And if I had to venture a guess,
I'd go with Miami because I like their quarterback to watch.
I agree. That was going to be my pick as well. Also, the only other team I could see doing it would maybe be Alabama or Oregon.
Like not being ranked, or
like not being as good, like falling out of the top 10. I think Miami's the clear and obvious choice, though.
Yeah. And when Boise State's 25.
Yep.
So. I give no shits about the NFL. I am looking forward to college football.
Should be good. Last thing I have here, and then we'll get to anything that you have before we say so long, but the NBA has announced opening night on NBC. There will be a doubleheader. It will be the Oklahoma City Thunder hosting Kevin Durant and the Houston Rockets. We have Golden State at the Lakers. Those games will be on NBC. Got Mike Tirico calling Thunder Rockets, and I believe Noah Eagle calling Warriors Lakers. So that's of note. You also have on Christmas, we have a their annual five games. So thank goodness the Minnesota Timberwolves will be playing after the Vikings play the Lions. They're the nightcap at the Denver Nuggets, 10:30 Eastern PM Eastern. You have Mavericks Warriors, Rockets Lakers, Spurs Thunder, and Cavaliers Knicks tip it all off. So very Western Conference heavy, as you might expect. Grizzlies are not playing on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. They're coming back from London. That's the reason why. Otherwise, they should be playing that. But there will be four games on MLK Day, January 19th. So interesting for that. Anything else you have before we say so long?
I hope that I am interested in these games because they are on NBC. For the only reason being because they are on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much anticipating this, and we're not that long. We're like 2.5 months away. We're not very far away from this.
No. No, not at all.
Because if it's Houston, OKC on ESPN, I couldn't give two shits about this.
Yep.
It's on NBC. I'll check it out. So we'll see what we got.
I want to see the opening production. I want to hear the music. I want to see what they do for like lineups. I want to hear Mike Tirico calling the NBA again. I want to hear Noah Eagle how they do. I just want to see how this is going to be for the year. And I think that's the biggest thing.
I would open up with the old, whatever the old open is. I would open up with that. And then have a big boom, and then whatever their new package is going to be, I would go with that.
Agreed.
So, we'll see. I see how the schedule. They got what, Sunday night basketball after the NFL, or I don't know, right before the Super Bowl and through. Then you got, you know, ABC is still doing these games, too. So, I don't know, just NBC is just going to do a much better job, and it's going to feel like a much bigger deal. So.
Yep.
This ESPN streaming service.
Yeah, isn't that this weird?
This is what? Kind of 2 weeks away.
Still don't really get it.
$30 for everything ESPN, which is what, like eight channels. It's not something I would buy. Like, if you've got cable, it's not something you need.
Right.
But I heard that, like, if you've got, like, YouTube TV hasn't come to an agreement yet. To where you can log in under your YouTube TV to get access to this. I guess the only reason why you would want it is because they've got, I guess they're going to have WWE pay-per-views now on this.
Well, and so the UFC is going to Paramount now.
Yeah, and then so that, and their UFC, WWE is owned by the same people. So WWE moves from Peacock to ESPN. And then UFC moves from ESPN to CBS, and $1 billion deals there. I guess what, $1.1 billion a year for UFC. I think WWE gets like $325 million.
Don't know if that's better value for Paramount, or is it the 5-year $1.5 billion deal that they gave South Park, which has been on fire here through
good
the
job.
First two episodes, just fantastic. So.
I should check out that last. I've been meaning to check out the last
one. Oh, boy. It hits.
I've seen about 90 seconds of it.
It'll hit home. There's a very familiar face to South Dakota in that.
I saw her face just melt off. it's like I wrote this. This is correct.
Yes, it is. Anything else before we say so long?
It's kind of the streaming things of where things are at right now, and, you know, Peacock with the NBA and everybody getting ready for, I guess, the streaming. The streaming is here.
I think it's
everybody kind of loading up. And you got, I mean, baseball this winter will be, you know, does NBC bring back baseball for the first time in, you know, 20-some years to make baseball a bigger deal? And, hey, maybe you have a baseball game every Sunday night on NBC. What a concept that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Make that a big deal and get that away from ESPN.
Yep.
Yeah, just kind of these last 20-plus years of ESPN just
having these sports and just not being good. No. I don't know what the college football song is this year. I don't give a shit.
Oh, I heard it. I can't remember.
I can't tell you what any of them have ever been. I don't remember what it was last year or 5 years ago. I don't know. No. But what happened to, and then I know they have their own theme. What happened to just having your own theme mm-hmm. and having that be like the thing to where, you know, we could play a game or I could play you the first 2 seconds of a song and you would know what the hell that song is. And you would know that it was Monday Night Football yep. or college basketball or March Madness. You could do that. And if I play you a song and say, who is this song? What was it? What year of whatever this was supposed to, I don't know Ooh. Why the need to have a song every year when it should just be, you know, the NBA on NBC. People are looking forward to this for the goddamn intro song to the broadcast.
Yep. I think we should do trivia on that here in the next couple weeks. I think that would be good.
Huh?
I think we should do it, make that trivia or something over the next couple sure. of weeks. That would be good.
Play okay. this and say, what was this? So it's, yes, NBA on NBC. And everybody else has some of their favorite. Monday Night Football. Dun, 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 dun.
Yep.
You know what that is. When you play these other songs, I don't know what this is. It's just a song to play before the game. And then the next year, they've got another band who does a song. Like, even like Sunday Night Football, you know what that is. You know who sings it, because she's been doing it for a decade.
Yep.
So that is identifiable to you. Once you hear that, you know what time of day it is. You know what the day is. You know what I'm going to be watching.
Mm-hmm.
This other stuff, it's like, I don't know what this is.
Agreed.
Who are these people, and what are they doing?
Agreed. Well, you have a great rest of your week, my friend. And we will talk to you next week.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Good luck with everything this week. Appreciate the time as always.
Yes. Hello to Charlie. And we'll look forward to his more college football.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Travis.
All right.
Travis Crins joining me here, Sports Block Podcast. Always appreciate his time as always. Great stuff there. Yes, he did mention that. We will be talking to Charlie Hildebrand next here on the Sports Block Podcast, available on Spotify as well as podcast.com. Search for Sports Block. Follow me on Twitter at Andy Stackin, Facebook Nathan Stackin, Travis Crins on Twitter at Travis Crins. A link to the podcast posted middle to later part of each week. College football talk next here on this week's edition of the Sports Block Podcast. All right, continuing here on the Sports Block Podcast. Last week, we began our college football season preview. We looked at the Big Ten, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Pac-2, Notre Dame. And guess who's back for more? Charlie Hildebrand, kind enough to join us from his vacation in the beautiful Seattle area, Big Ten country. Charlie, our resident college football expert from the Northwest Iowa Review, welcome back. Thank you, my friend, for joining me. I hope you're having a wonderful time out there.
I am. I should say I'm working on a deal. I'm trying to make sure I can keep the Seattle Supersonics in Seattle and not leave to Oklahoma.
Oh.
Some people said that you're too late and it's already a done deal, but I'm going to see if I can make anything happen.
Well, you know what? Maybe the expansion team will come in there and you can help bring that aboard.
Maybe so. Fingers crossed.
And I would hope that you're, when you're building the roster, that you put Gary Payton and Sean Kemp on the same team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care how old they are. Of course they've got to be playing for the Supersonics. Absolutely. Who else would play there?
I don't know.
I mean, maybe Deadlift Shrimp.
I was just going to bring him up. Well, this week we are focusing on the SEC, the AAC, the Sun Belt, and Conference USA. And so we're going to get right into it here with the SEC. And Well, when I was doing my research and reading up on everything, I don't know if you got the same vibe I did, but I'm going to kind of make a bold proclamation this year. Are you ready for this?
I mean, what better place for bold proclamations? I'm seated, so I'm definitely ready.
All right. I think the SEC is weaker this year than last year.
You think so?
I think
so. I mean, sorry, go ahead with your thought, and then I will say my thing that you could be right, you could be wrong. I think it's going to come down to one big thing.
Well, the reason I say this is that a vast majority of the teams in the SEC are starting new quarterbacks. Georgia starting a new quarterback. Alabama, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Missouri, Kentucky, and Mississippi State. Blake Chapin, he's back, but there's just a lot of turnover.
Mississippi State's not going to make much noise in the SEC this year. I don't think. But.
You know what? Just to get them out of the way, I have them finished tied for last with Kentucky, both winless in SEC play.
I didn't go through and pick every win and loss, but I think those two will be at the bottom as well.
Yeah, it's not good. It doesn't look good for either of those two teams. But I just look at the teams that have the better quarterback play. It's arguable that South Carolina has the best quarterback in the conference in Sellers, but there's a lot of question marks surrounding him. Well, you got Nussmeier at LSU, and LSU seems primed to maybe make a run. Of course, Archmania there in Austin. But there's just a lot of other questions with so many guys who have left and graduated and a lot of guys that need to be replaced, not only at the quarterback position, but other key areas for a lot of teams, including the likes of like Alabama, Ole Miss. I could be proven wrong, but it just feels to me that with all of the questions at quarterback for several teams and replacing a lot of starters from last year, that the SEC may not have as dominant of a set of teams as we've seen in years past.
I think that you could definitely be true. I think there's enough talent there that if they hit on a few quarterbacks that didn't start, that mm-hmm. that can quickly be erased. The other thing is I think there are three teams, one of which you mentioned their quarterback, and two others. And I'm flipping through. I think they've got a fair amount of starters back, but I could be wrong. I'm double checking.
Which team are you thinking?
I'm that quick here. Yeah, they do. The three, in addition to South Carolina, I think are Auburn and Florida. Yes. That all three of them return talented quarterbacks that kind of got thrown into the fire.
Yep.
And I think they'll all be better. And it just depends if they are a full step and a half better. They could each have really, really big seasons and lead teams to big seasons.
Yeah.
If they're just kind of like, oh, I started last year and now I'm like a hair better and complete, one pass a game that I maybe didn't, I don't know if that will make a huge difference then. But mm-hmm. I think if those three hit, then you basically just find one of the teams that, is probably going to finish towards the top of the conference regardless to hit on a quarterback.
Yep.
But I think that's all it would take for the SEC to be really, really good again. Yep. But like you said, there are more question marks than they have a lot of times. And I think this is just going to happen a lot going forward with the transfer portal, too, is that there will just be times it'll be like, yeah, this guy was good at this school, and then he left for somewhere else.
I'm glad you brought up Florida because they are the most difficult team for me to peg in terms of how they're going to do because of the health and uncertainty of their quarterbacks, their star quarterback, DJ Legue. He had shoulder injuries last year. It didn't require surgery, but to start camp, he was in a walking boot with a calf injury. And I know we've seen it in the NBA with lots of torn Achilles lately, what Tyrese Halliburton, Jason Tatum, a few others. I just am worried now with can Legue stay healthy? Because if he can, Florida's going to be, I think, maybe a 9-10 win team, but that calf injury really concerns me more so than the shoulder injury because the calf, he gets tackled or he's running around just right. I mean, that Achilles could snap. So Florida for me is the most difficult team to peg just because of the uncertainty of the health of their quarterback for the entirety of the season.
I understand all that. I would also add on top of that that they do not play an easy schedule either.
No, right.
I think if he's healthy and plays well, I think they could manage that schedule. I think it's also possible he's healthy and plays well, and it's like, well, Florida went 9-3 because it turns out that USF's not bad. I mean, I don't think they're going to lose at home to USF. Mm-hmm. But Florida State's way better, and there's just a lot of these other teams. I mean, you know, they're playing – if Florida State's a lot better, which they may or may not be, I mean, they play at Miami too, so they're playing the other two big Florida schools.
Yep.
In addition to, you know, Texas, Texas A&M, Georgia, Mississippi, and Tennessee – and, you know, that's, it's just like that, regardless of years, I mean, that's almost always going to be a very difficult schedule.
I circled multiple games for each team that I thought are kind of like a coin toss, but also could certainly define their season. Like, this could be, a turning point in them. For Florida, I have four games that I circled that I'm like, I don't really know. At Miami is one of them. At Texas A&M, at Ole Miss, and then home against Florida State. I think Florida is better than at least three of those teams, maybe Miami being the one they're not, but I also think that Florida is going to want to seek a little revenge for the way that game went in the Swamp last year when Miami just absolutely embarrassed them. I mean, the surrounding talent for Florida is great. Billy Napier has done a great job recruiting, getting you know, some transfers in, but it all boils down to Legway. And if he's not healthy for any of those games, they're going to lose them. I that's ultimately going to define their season.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways that's really true, that's what it's going to come down to. Now, I think you could say that about a lot of teams. It's like, hey, if you lose your starting quarterback to injury, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, we're going to be a lot worse. I mean, you know, there's always, you know, the random stories of, you know, Ohio State losing their starter before the season and then losing JT Barrett and, you know, plugging in with, shotgun Cardale Jones.
Yeah.
But that's obviously the exception to the rule. That's incredibly rare.
Well,
so, yeah.
Yep, and like for South Carolina, I mentioned Sellers earlier. Lenore Sellers is arguably the best quarterback in the SEC returning this year. Maybe our Arch Manning, yes, but we haven't seen a ton of Arch. We anticipate, we know what we're going to get. But Sellers has...
And let's be honest, he's the son of the least talented Manning son, too. I mean, that doesn't mean he can't be good, but, you know...
Yes, it is. And
he didn't have as good a career as Peyton or Eli. Now, granted, a lot of that's a neck injury, so that's not a total fair thing. But still, the other two are Hall of Famers.
Yes, very true. Maybe Cooper is the Hall of Famer in, like, commercials or something. But, no, that's still Peyton. So, poor Cooper. But he does have the son that is going to be the number one overall pick. It sounds like in 2026, I saw that Arch Manning, Archie's grandfather. Yeah, his grandfather said he's going to come back to Texas next year. So for all those people kind of anticipating that he would be the number one overall pick in the 2026 draft, you might have to wait until 2027 now. The march for Arch is going to be delayed a little bit. Potential.
He could be. Also, I think if Texas wins a national title and he wins the Heisman and throws for 4,500 yards with, you know, 50 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, I don't think he's going to come back to do that again.
No.
Now, that's an extreme scenario, but...
But going back to Lenore Sellers, again, I think he's perhaps the best quarterback in the SEC, but he has so many new pieces around him. So even if he stays healthy... We don't know what South Carolina can ultimately do just because of all those pieces. And they do have all those new faces, I should say. And they do have a somewhat difficult schedule. I mean, you have to play Clemson. Virginia Tech's not going to be easy right out of the chutes.
For an SEC team, those are two tough non-conference games. Yes. I mean, we'll see how good or bad Virginia Tech is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're going to be like 3-9 or anything, so that's a tough opener.
Yep.
And obviously Clemson's going to be tough, too.
Yep. They have to go to LSU. Oklahoma can be a toss-up. Missouri might be a toss-up, too. It's just, again, with South Carolina, with all those new faces, it doesn't matter if Sellers stays healthy or not, if those other contributing pieces don't step up, and that's the big unknown with the Gamecocks.
So you brought up South Carolina, one of the teams you have also mentioned in running down schedule. Do you want me to tell you who my not my surprise team?
Yeah.
My potential surprise team slash dark horse from the SEC.
Yes, please, by all means.
And this pains me to say this as a Nebraska fan.
Oh.
I think it's Missouri, and it's going to be interesting.
Ooh, okay.
Missouri, basically, kind of like you said, they have to replace a lot of stuff on offense. That's not going to be easy.
Nope.
They're going to need to find a quarterback. They're going to need to find, they lose their top two running backs. They lose their top two receivers and their quarterback. That's a lot to replace. I'm not disputing that.
Yep.
But they've got their offensive line back, a lot of it. They also had a really, really good defense last year from a team that went 10-3 and returned nine starters back on defense.
Yes. Yep.
And when you look at their schedule, it's not like it's an easy schedule, but for the, we're going to say this, I think, every year for every conference going forward. With the mega conferences, it's going to depend who you play.
Yep.
And for the SEC, it's not that bad of a schedule. It's not like cakewalk easy. But they get Alabama and South Carolina at home. They get Texas A&M at home. At Auburn, we'll see. I mean, Kansas, we'll see also, but, that's a non-conference game. And, I think at Oklahoma's not easy, but I'm not as high on Oklahoma as some other people. So, like, when you look at it, I don't think that – I don't have Missouri in the SEC title game.
Yep.
But I think they could be, like we're going to see a lot in the SEC and Big Ten – a team that could be like, hey, we didn't win the conference, but we got to 10 wins and we're in the playoff now.
Well, as you said, they avoid Georgia, Texas, LSU, and Tennessee. Alabama has to come to Columbia. I have Missouri.
Alabama, South Carolina, and Texas A&M all in Columbia. Yep.
I have Alabama beating Missouri, but would I be surprised if Missouri beats them? Absolutely not. Again, just with a lot of the questions surrounding Alabama at the quarterback position. It really helps when you have a great wide receiver like Ryan Williams, and by all accounts, it seems like Kalen DeBoer has got the good recruits to keep coming to Alabama. There really hasn't been a drop-off there, and he's getting guys in the portal. But when you lose a talent like Jalen Milroe, and you have to break in a new quarterback, there's going to be some growing pains. And if I'm looking at this here, Ty Simpson, who I think we saw a little bit of last year. I mean, is he the guy? We just really don't know.
You're right that we don't know. We'll see. The upside is that if you're an Alabama fan, is that Kalen DeBoer, sometimes the defenses are hit and miss. Usually he finds a way to get pretty good offense one way or another. I don't know that they will be among the two or three best Alabama offenses of the last 15 years, but obviously there have been times they've had some truly incredible offenses with the OCs that Nick Saban had at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they will be good on offense. It just depends. They may not be legitimately going to definitely win a national title with our offense good, or if they're going to be like, well, we're going to have to work on some things along the way and get some plays out of our defense, hope our defense is better. And then make the playoff and kind of go from there and keep improving.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so like...
Well, like you said, they've got Ryan Williams back, which is a really nice start for a quarterback, too.
Yes. And I'm just looking through some of these schedules here because it does seem like there are certain teams that have daunting road challenges and other teams kind of get lucky. I mean, I don't know how Missouri has gotten another favorable schedule, but they have. How about Georgia? They have to go to Tennessee, but Tennessee's not going to be as good as they were last year now that Iamaliava is gone to UCLA, and I know their other guy, who was it here? Joey Aguilar was there, went to UCLA, and now comes back. So it's essentially like he and Iamaliava just swap spots. But if I'm looking at a team like Georgia, outside of that road game at Tennessee, they get Alabama at home. They get Texas at home. They get Ole Miss at home. They their road games are at Auburn, winnable. Mississippi State, that's easy. And a neutral site game with Florida. I mean, that's as far as SEC schedules go, that's pretty favorable for Georgia. And I think that's going to lead them to have a really good year.
I think they definitely could. They lose Carson Beck at quarterback, which, like, I think is a loss, but we can debate how bad of a loss it is, where he was up and down at times.
He was bad last year in general. Like, yeah, very up and down. Wasn't helped by some of his wide receivers dropping a lot of passes, but I don't know if that... I mean, he was supposed to be the real deal, and he didn't really show it last year.
And, well, I mean, I'm sure Georgia will be fine on offense. I think, to me, in some ways, they're kind of like the opposite of the F Alabama, that I think that the offense, you may have to kind of try to work some things as you go along and figure things out. I'm sure they'll be plenty good on defense, though. I know they've got they've got half their starters back on defense, which if you're the SEC champ and a playoff team and a national title contender, if you get half your starters back on defense, you're probably going to be pretty good to start with.
You mentioned Auburn a little bit ago. They are one of the teams that I could see taking a step forward, but I'm still just a little hesitant. I mean, Jackson Arnold didn't pan out at Oklahoma, but, you know, is this the year that Hugh Freeze can get them back to the promised land? That's a big opening game against Baylor. Baylor's a team that could very well factor into the Big 12 championship conversation. They have to go to Oklahoma, A&M. They get Georgia at home, but I don't think that's great. Alabama at home, that's interesting. Auburn's a team that I think could very... I have them at 6-6, but... 7-5, excuse me. 7-5. But I could see them going 8-4 or 9-3 as well. I mean, it's just a matter of... You know, like your faith in some of these coaches, and again, the favorable schedule. But what are your thoughts on Auburn?
I said that Missouri was my dark horse / surprise team.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Auburn is the most volatile. Like, we could go anywhere from, you know, 4-8 to 10-2.
Yes.
Like, I think they could. I don't think they're going to go 10-2, but I don't have to stretch anything that far to see it. I can also see him being like, you know, because Auburn seems to be one of the most, like, shoot from the hip, we're making a coaching change, we don't care whether it's a good decision or not. And sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. I can also see him being like, Hugh Freeze, you're fired. You lost, you're 2-3, and you've lost back-to-back at Oklahoma, at Texas A&M. We're firing you, and we're letting the interim take over during the bye week before we play Georgia. Like, see you later. Like, I don't think that that's going to happen, but, like, does that seem like that big of a stretch?
No.
For what Auburn's been like in our lifetime?
Right. Well, yeah, outside of the Cam Newton year.
Well, I mean, like, they've had other years where they were good, too.
True, just seems
like every Auburn coach, and, you know, Hugh Freeze had a loser, or, you know, they went 6-7 his first year. But that most successful Auburn coaches, like, have one huge year in their first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, either win a national title, play for a national title, or play in, like, you know, what used to be a BCS bowl game now would be like making the playoff or something. And then just 2 years later are fired because they're 2-3. And they're just like, nope, that's it. We're starting over. And I don't think it's going to come to that, but I think that it's probably, I mean, I guess I'm ultimately going to split the difference. And I think Auburn's going to be like 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to be like just the perfect, like, yeah, I don't know if Hugh Freeze like really, really helped his job, but he didn't hurt it. And he at least bought time for another year and kind of punted to next season.
Yep.
Oklahoma, which seems like that's more or less, that seems like the position Auburn's always in to start with.
It is. But Oklahoma, too, is one of those teams that, you know, Brett Venables has come there, but they haven't really gotten results. They were terrible by Oklahoma standards in their first year in the SEC last year. And they don't have a very easy schedule. I mean, they have to go... they do get LSU at home to end the year, but neutral site with Texas. They're at South Carolina, at Tennessee, at Alabama. They host Michigan. I mean, this is an Oklahoma squad that was awful offensively last year. John Mateer comes in from Washington State, so he should be able to boost this offense a little bit. But Venables is definitely on the hot seat. Is he the coach that is on the hottest seat out of any of the coaches in the SEC? I'm going to say no, but
That's a good question. I think I'm because there's so many more teams in each conference now, I've got to flip to the front of the conference page to see each team just to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's probably either Venables or Hugh Freeze.
Yep.
I think you can – anyone else, I think if they're like 3-1 through the first four games, they're either fine or they're like, well, that's okay. I think there's guys, if they start 1-3, could pass any of those guys very quickly and be like, no, actually, it's this guy instead now. Mm-hmm. Like, to a lesser degree, I think it's probably like I think Brian Kelly, to a degree, kind of is.
Yeah, that was the name that pops into my mind the most, just because he has not. Like LSU, he's had talented quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels a couple years ago, and then last year Nussmeier just never fully clicked. This is a make or break year, I think, for LSU and Brian Kelly.
And I think the other one is Billy Napier at Florida, too. And I don't think he's a bad coach. Mm-hmm. It's just weird, and they've had to play such nasty schedules, too.
Yep.
And then if they just a couple of times don't get a couple of breaks and get – even if it's not Lagway getting hurt, if somebody gets hurt, they're, you know – if they're 3-4 at some point, I don't know that he'd get fired in the middle of the season, but he's going to have a scorching hot seat.
I think Kalen DeBoer in Alabama always going to be on that hot seat just because Alabama fans have a ridiculous set of standards.
That and just having to replace Nick Saban, right, too. Yes. But, yeah, you're also right with that.
The other guy I'm going to say is Sam Pittman at Arkansas. I think Arkansas fans really like Pittman because he's one of them. But Arkansas just hasn't been able to sustain excellence. And I have them at 5-7 this year. Could I see them winning a couple of other games? Yes. I mean, they do play Notre Dame, and we mentioned it last week. But Notre Dame going to Arkansas just seems really weird. But that would be a great place to get a big win for Pittman and maybe save his job or get him cool the hot seat a little bit. But Arkansas is in a real difficult spot here. I think that he needs
it's a tough schedule too. Yes, I mean, you touched on it some, but yeah.
Yup. I just.
I mean, they'll be 2-0, and then they have to go at Mississippi. I don't know if Mississippi or Ole Miss is going to be as good as last year. I don't think Ole Miss is going to be bad, though. And you know, I mean, I think if you're Arkansas, that's definitely we need to win this game.
Yep. And then at Memphis is going to be a little worse this year, but it's still on the road. You never know. Notre Dame loss. I think I don't have them winning. I have them winning at Memphis, but I don't have them winning a conference game until November 1st when they host Mississippi State. It's just that difficult. But could they beat A&M? Absolutely. I just think A&M is a little bit better. I believe in Mike Elko a little bit, or Matt Elko, excuse me, a little bit more than I do Sam Pittman.
I think that's fair. And I think you know, Kentucky and Mississippi State are probably the two worst teams in the conference.
Yes.
Even with all the fun we had talking about last year, I think it's probably Vanderbilt as the next worst.
That was good.
And then you've got like 5 or 6 teams that are all in like that. You might be the 4th worst team and be 5-7 or 6-6. But also, like, hey, if you catch a couple breaks, you could be 8-4 and 9-3, and everything's going to be, you know, really, things are going to look good for you too. And, you know, it's kind of like the NFL where, I mean, I know they play 17 games now, not 16.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the difference between being the 2 or 3 best teams in the NFL and the 2 or 3 worst teams are usually really good or really bad. And then you have a bunch of teams that are like, well, we could be 4-13 or 13-4. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to depend how many of those toss-up games we win.
Yes. And every team has multiple toss-up games here that could ultimately flip who finishes at the top of the SEC. I'm glad you brought up Vanderbilt because I was going to ask. They were the surprise of college football last year. Like that win against Alabama is the biggest win, I think, of the year. Just the surprise. But Diego Pavia is back. They have some good returning talent. They do have, you know, they have to go to Virginia Tech week 2. They're at Alabama, they host LSU, they're at Texas, so certainly that's not easy. They're at Tennessee, but I think Vandy can still get to bowl eligibility here. I have them at 6-6, and I think they will be better than at least 3 or 4 teams in the SEC.
I think they're also going to go 6-6, with the difference being that I think they may be like a bit better than last year, but they're also not going to get any of the like, hey, guess what? We caught someone off guard.
Right. Yes.
So, like, I think they're going to earn. I mean, not that they didn't earn it last year. I don't want to make it sound like they weren't worthy of it, but it's going to, I think they're more so going to have to earn it just because it's, they're not going to be slept on as much this year.
Exactly. It's not, oh, here comes the same old Vandy squad. No, it's like, okay, no, wait. We got to make sure we're ready for them because they're going to come in and be ready to hit us in the mouth. But
I mean, agree.
It really helps when you have Diego Pavi. I mean, he's one of the few quarterbacks who returns to his team last year. So you don't have to worry about that portion of it. And that should automatically help elevate the team at least a little bit, one would think.
I think so, and I'm going to preface this by saying he's definitely not as good as these guys. But you know how sometimes you'll hear someone be like, well, you know, he's not Randy Moss, but he's a poor man's Randy Moss. Mm-hmm. I feel like Diego Pavia, in a lot of ways, is not like Diet Johnny Manziel or Diet Baker Mayfield, but like high V brand Johnny Manziel or Baker Mayfield, where it's like it still works. It's not the same, but it's not bad. And as long as you know ahead of time that you're drinking Hee-Haw and not Mountain Dew.
Yep.
Because if you just say, here's Mountain Dew, and it's Hee-Haw, you're like, something's off.
Yep.
But they're like, hey, it's Walmart brand Mountain Dew or whatever, and you know it ahead of time. You're like, okay, like, this isn't bad, and we can make this work. And I that probably came across more negative than I meant
no,
to.
No, it's fine.
You understand what I'm saying now.
Yes. Yep.
So he's good. He's not a guy that's going to win the Heisman Trophy or, like, lead the nation, you know, in touchdowns or anything like that, but he's a guy that you can be like, we really don't want to be nursing a 3-point lead late. He's got a 3rd-and-8 from midfield. Like, we don't want to be in that situation against this guy.
Yep. We talked about Auburn already and just the uncertainty. We don't really know what we're going to get with them. Missouri, you like them as your dark horse in the SEC. I certainly understand that. Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Tennessee, to me, I think they're going to be good. They're not going to be as good as they were last year. Certainly, Tennessee and Ole Miss aren't. What do you think of that trio of teams?
I would agree with that. It's also weird just seeing that Ole Miss is playing. I mean, I get that Washington State is not, like, they're sort of in a conference, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just weird seeing Mississippi playing a non-conference game against Washington State on October 11th.
Yep, I agree.
Which is very odd, but I think Ole Miss will be back in a bowl game. It'll be fairly good. I definitely don't think they're getting back to 10 wins again, though. I mean, if they do, then, I mean, we're talking like Lane Kiffin should maybe be coach of the year based off the guys that they lost. And, I mean, more or less, I think it's going to be the same with Tennessee. I think they'll be fine. I don't think they're going to be in the playoff, but, you know, they lose so much on offense, and Josh Heupel's just more of an offensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're good enough that they can lead on their defense and probably get to, like, 8-4 in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of Tennessee fans don't love that, but I think they could, not all, but most of them would be like, you know, after all the stuff we lost last year, if we go 8-4 and win a bowl game and are 9-4 and build for the following year, you know, that's maybe not perfect, but it's also not like that bad either, all things considered. Now, if Georgia goes 8-4, then 9-4, that's going to be like, oh no, the world's on fire if you're a Georgia fan.
Exactly right. I have Tennessee at 9-3, and I have them as a fringe playoff team. I haven't put like the 12 playoff teams that I have in the tournament yet, but as I'm looking at this, I have 4 SEC teams that I think will make the playoff, and Tennessee would be on that cut line of, could they get in?
Yeah. Yes. The first 4 out, that all they need is like 1 break and they're in then.
Yes. Yep. Or yeah. Like, like maybe like a Clemson or Miami really struggle and the ACC gets one team, or maybe like Alabama slips up and Tennessee could bolt and take their spot. But really, I just look at it. Florida could go a long ways. Again, it all comes down to Legway's health. And again, that calf strain, I just hope it doesn't lead to an Achilles injury at some point during the year. But to me, the three teams that are the cream of the crop in the SEC this year, everyone's gung-ho on Texas. I get it. But if Arch Manning was so good, you would have thought he would have maybe played a little bit more last year than Quinn Ewers, but it's understandable. Georgia and LSU. I think those three teams are locks to make the college football playoff this year. And it certainly, as we mentioned, in the case of LSU and Brian Kelly, he needs to do it because they've been a little upset with, or they haven't met the expectations that he brought down there.
They haven't yet. I know a lot of places he's been, it's not instantly that they're great right away, and they kind of built to it. And I think that, like you said, I think there's a good chance that that's the year this year. I know one of my favorite things I heard about LSU, I don't remember, I wish I remember where I heard this. I don't even remember if it was like on TV or YouTube or Reddit somewhere. But that LSU is kind of like cold pizza. That and cold pizza, like when you're out of high school or college, not as a kid.
Not the former ESPN show.
Not the former ESPN show. And I mean like a decent cold pizza, not a Totino's or whatever the cheapest ones are.
Yes.
Or like Tony's. I think that was a super cheap one. But, you know, when you're an adult and you're trying to think of what you want for dinner, you know, a lot of times you're like, you know, I don't really want cold pizza. And then you start thinking about how, like, well, I'm going to have to go drive to this place if I want to get this. If I want to make this, I'm missing this thing, and I got to go to the grocery store. And the more you think about it, the more appealing cold pizza gets, or frozen pizza, that you're like, you know what? I just have to preheat the oven for a little bit and toss this in for 16 minutes, and then I can be eating pizza pretty soon here. And I feel like that's kind of like LSU, that there's reasons to be like, I don't know if I want to say that LSU is going to be the SEC champion or playing in the SEC title game. But you kind of start looking at things and you're like, you know, actually compared to some of these other things, that's actually not that bad of a proposition after all. And maybe that is a pretty good choice right now.
Well, look who they have to play at Alabama and at Ole Miss. Are there
that's
two
part of it is the schedule.
Yeah. And they might not be the best team. So like, if you look at Texas, they have to go to Ohio State right away. Imagine, like, that could be the game of the year.
To be fair, LSU has to go at Clemson early, too.
Yes. I mean,
I think we can agree that Ohio State's better than Clemson at the end of the year, but
both those teams could, both Texas and LSU very well could lose those opening games, and no one would be all that surprised. The difference being, though, that LSU has a very favorable schedule the rest of the way, while Texas has to go to Florida, and the big one is at Georgia November 15th. LSU gets to avoid that. The toughest game they would have remaining would be at Alabama, and I think they're a little better than Alabama this year. So I'm not trying to say that it's a slam dunk they're going to go to Tuscaloosa and win, but LSU has a more favorable schedule the rest of the way after that opening game at Clemson than Texas does.
I would generally agree with that. I also think that I mean, look, I don't want to spoil everything right now. I think I've got LSU and Texas playing each other in the SEC title game, and part of that is the schedules. I think that for as talented as those two teams are, that's like as good of an SEC schedule as you can realistically hope for, too.
Yes, yep, especially given the talent, too. You mentioned Missouri with being your dark horse because of their schedule. LSU's is more difficult than Missouri's, but LSU still has a little more talent than Missouri, so I think you
got much more back on offense.
Yes.
And we're also better on defense last year and seem to be headed in the right direction.
Do you think Harold Perkins Jr. is going to like reestablish himself? Because he's kind of disappeared after really bursting onto the scene a couple of years ago.
I mean, for his sake, I hope so. I mean, you always want to see guys that show promise and spark early to continue to grow that. And you know, there's times you see that a guy's good early and then gets in a slump, whether it's injury or something else, and then just kind of, you know, quote-unquote, gets back to the basics. And I'm like, well, this worked when I was really successful. Let's just get back to doing that. And I for his sake, I hope that that's what happens.
Anything else that really captivates you or catches your attention or catches your eye here with the SEC this year? Any specific players you're looking at? Again, we won't reveal our our championship thing. I know you had said that you probably have LSU and Texas in there. I will just say that I have three teams, only three teams in the SEC with 10 or more wins, but I have no team going undefeated. That's a little, I've picked undefeated teams in the past. I don't have that this year with any SEC team.
I don't know if I have anybody undefeated this year. I might not pick any undefeated teams ever again because the thought of, like, yep, we need to go undefeated to win the national title just isn't a thing anymore.
Right, yep.
I mean, even Boise State wasn't undefeated last year and got in the playoff. So, I mean,
yep.
If you're a mid-major team that nobody cares about or knows anything about, you might need to be undefeated to get in, but like, aside from that, it's like, yeah, I mean, if you're a power team and you win 10 regular season games, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be in. If you're 11-1, I think you're going to get in.
Yes.
Yep. You know, unless you're a mid-major team, and even then, you might still be able to get in, depending on some other factors.
Unless you're Ball State or Eastern Michigan, they have to go undefeated to get into at least even the conversation.
Look, if Ball State goes undefeated, I think they deserve to be in.
I agree. The Fighting David Lettermans. But anything else that's really that you want to discuss regarding the SEC, or anything that you're really interested by, players, teams, etc.?
I think the only thing, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, but the only thing we didn't like go too deep in on is it just seems like every year there's some SEC team with a coach on the hot seat, and sometimes it's not the obvious ones that just start slow and gets fired in the middle of the year. And I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I hope that that happens. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, not wishing that anybody gets fired, but I do kind of wonder just like, and even if they don't get fired during the season, I think we can agree with, you know, I forget if it's 16 or 18 teams in the SEC now, but
16,
but yep, it's big enough that I would imagine we're going to see someone fired in the SEC basically every single year, yeah, like going forward or for most years. And I just kind of wonder who it's going to end up being.
I think it could be Stoops at Kentucky.
I could see that also, which I'd feel bad because he's been the best Kentucky coach in so long. Right, and to just be like, well, sorry, like, starting over, which I mean, I don't know.
Don't let a couple of bad years negate all of the good that he has brought to Kentucky and making them a viable football program again. Kind of like what Clark Lee is doing at Vanderbilt here. Now, obviously, he's going to have way more flexibility. He's not going to be on the firing line for a while unless Vanderbilt consistently goes 3-9 or 2-10 over the next.
For him to get fired at Vanderbilt, I think they need to be like, oh, we had an academic scandal, and that made the academic people upset.
Right.
The other thing with Clark, I'd say, is just, or with Clark Lee, is if they go to a bowl game again this year, whether they're 6-6 or 7-5 or whatever, mm-hmm, then you just start wondering who's going to be like, actually, let's just take the Vanderbilt head coach. That's a guy that's done more with less, and let's just give him more and see if we can win with that.
Do you think he would, because isn't he an alum or of Vanderbilt, or that's where he played at? Yeah. So
he might be, I don't remember, but we've seen, I think that was more of a thing 15 or 20 years ago. We've seen a lot of guys in the last 10 years that are, I went to this school, and then like, that's okay, this other one offered me more money, I'm going to go there now.
Well, we're very familiar with that as Jackrabbit fans, with Jimmy Rogers leaving for Washington State. Granted, FCS.
Now, it wouldn't be up a level in terms of division, but obviously there's, you know, 40 college football programs that it would be like, well, yeah, it's obviously easier to win here than it is at Vanderbilt. They're going to spend way more money on football.
Right.
Probably more than 40. I don't know why that was. Probably 60.
But maybe now that Vanderbilt's had a good year, maybe now the purses will open up a little bit more. People, the alums will say, hey, yeah, let's try and keep being a consistently good football team and not just let it be a one-off year.
I don't know how many offspring there are of Vanderbilt who was so rich and wealthy. Maybe there's enough of them left that they'll be like, thank you for honoring our great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, and we will give you all this money now.
Maybe
they're all broke now. I don't know.
Maybe they'll.
And Cornelius Vanderbilt, I think, was his name, and I don't know. I have no idea how many people are still, like, living off of that now.
Well, we should look. Maybe they'll collude with the Rockefellers.
I mean, maybe, but also the thing is, I think he's, like, 100 years earlier than J.D. Rockefeller. So, I mean, it's each generation, I would assume, it's getting more and more spread out. I mean, I don't want to make it sound, I mean, I'm sure they're doing fine. But, I mean, I don't know if they're like, oh, yeah, like, we're all 100 millionaires anymore.
Right.
Or maybe they are. I don't know. I know very little about. I had to really sprint, you know, like, pull deep from my brain to remember his first name was Cornelius.
Yeah, let's see. He was born 1794, died 1877, built his wealth in railroads. So, he's, let's see. It's interesting.
Second, when are we going to get into railroads? Can we still make a lot of money off that? Or do you think we got to do something else now?
Well, I hear that they want to build a nuclear, something nuclear on the moon. So, I mean, maybe we should start low with the railroad and then shoot, aim high.
For build the moon. A railroad to the moon?
No, it's like, it's a nuclear.
No, I know what you're saying. Reactor. I'm saying, should we build a railroad to the moon?
Well, why
so
not?
Then they can do that.
You know what, Charlie? You played Mario Kart before, right?
I played, you were making our own Rainbow Road?
Yes, exactly right. I mean, hey, it's crazier things have been done. No, not really, but you get the drift. I mean, can you imagine if we built a rainbow road to the moon, how much money we would get? Plus, we could put tolls on there, and that we really get. Oh, like, oh, you got to the stratosphere, that'll be $5,000.
Like, easy tie-in. Guess what? Schools, depending on what they feel at the time, either the rainbows or rainbow warriors, we do this in Hawaii.
Yes.
We get Hawaii to help be like, oh, yeah, of course, this is perfect. This is our sponsor.
I like it. We got something going here. We'll revisit that here a little later on. So let's focus on, or just touch briefly on a couple of these other conferences. Again, we don't do a deep dive on the non-Power Four conferences. So, again, apologies to the American and East Carolina fans out there. But let's just go to the Sun Belt here. We're going to stay in the general vicinity or area of the country in the South. And I'm not going to – I think James Madison continued level of excellence since moving from the FCS to the FBS. I think they're going to play in the title game against Texas State. Texas State has really become a consistently good program here in the Sun Belt. And I like James Madison over Texas State in the Sun Belt. Do you have any thoughts on the Sun Belt?
I think that's a good pick. I also have James Madison. I think this will also be a thing in the new college football era that we'll have to remember going forward is a lot of these smaller schools or mid-major, whatever you want to say. My brain always calls them mid-major conferences.
Yep.
But then a lot of those schools are going to have so few starters back each year. Because anyone that's good is going to be like, well, yeah, of course, I'm going to go take more money to play at, like, a power conference school.
Yep, they're going to get poached.
I know in the Sun Belt West, according to Phil Steele, every single team in the West has less than half their starters back, except Southern Miss, who went 1-11 last year. So I don't think Southern Miss is going to make it. But anyways, I've got James Madison and I've got Louisiana as my two teams playing in the Sun Belt Championship game.
Arguably no conference is weirder, more irrelevant than Conference USA. Congrats to Delaware.
I think we've talked about this before. It's weird, though. There was a point in time, Conference USA was never the best, like, group of five or mid-major conference.
Mm-hmm.
But for a long time, it definitely wasn't the worst. And there was a point in time where it was like, you know, sometimes it was the AAC that was the second best, or was the best one, and before, you know, the Big East and that all happened, it was like, oh, well, you know, it's the Mountain West, and there were years you were like, you know, you could make a case Conference USA's the best, and they have just been poached left and right.
Yes. College basketball, I look at the WAC as being, like, the worst conference. They keep getting teams poached and going to other conferences. I feel that way with Conference USA. Like, it's just mediocre at best. I mean, oh, we got Kennesaw State. Yay. This year, they welcome Missouri State and Delaware. So I'm going to – it doesn't really matter here. Liberty, I tell you – okay.
You didn't want to pick Liberty, and then you see their record and how many starters they have back. And it's like, yeah, actually, that makes more sense, and I think I'm going to have Liberty in the title game too.
What do you – like? Who are they going to lose to in conference? James Madison's their most difficult opponent.
Yeah, I don't know who they're going to lose to in conference.
Could they be 13-0 and make the college football playoff? I mean, I wouldn't want that. I mean, it's such a weak schedule. I mean, the fact that...
I think they would have to be 13-0. I think if they lose once, there's enough old-school brain powers that be. But it just be like, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Like, they if they lose one, they're done. But I'm looking here and like,
I mean, they'll just be like, yeah, we remember what happened when they played Oregon and got murdered in that game. Exactly. But, yeah, I would assume they're going to lose somewhere just because it's college football. And it's hard to go undefeated, but...
But where's that loss going to come from if you look at their schedule? I don't know. James Madison would seem to be the best one. And I, in fact, I'm going
to
say it.
I've got to look to see. I mean, all these teams are not good, but I'm wondering, is... Yeah, I don't know. I know after James Madison, they play at Old Dominion, and Old Dominion's coming off a bye week, but I don't think Old Dominion's going to beat them as much as I want to talk myself into that happening.
Mm-hmm. Then you have to go to UTEP. No, that's not going to matter. They get to play Delaware and Missouri State, the two newcomers, back to like in consecutive weeks at home. That seems a little unfair.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
But with that being said, I'm going to go with a picking Liberty to win Conference USA. I just am. Like, it's way too easy. But their opponent, I'm going to make a surprise pick here, Delaware.
Okay. I respect it. I'm going Western Kentucky.
Yeah, if Western Kentucky...
I think yours is a more fun pick.
Western Kentucky consistently reloads. They're always very good. They're in the conversation. They have a fun offense routinely. I just wanted to go a little off the reservation here and pick a wild card. And Delaware's had a very good level of... a sustained level of success at the FCS level. And I think they can translate that to the FBS level. It might not be right away, but why not? Let's have some fun and have them get blown out by Liberty.
I respect it. I like it. Blown out by a one-loss Liberty.
Yes. And then, if Liberty's in there, then Liberty Mutual should sponsor that championship game, but then we'd have to hear that damn commercial and jingle over and over again.
I mean, look, Stackin', I don't know what company, some company's going to come up with some jingle that we're going to get sick of by week two. Like, who it is, I don't know. I will always miss that brief window of time, though, where, you know, some guy would get hurt and the announcers would be like, oh my God, what a serious injury.
Yeah.
Hold your loved ones so close, family. We go to commercial. I'm so sorry. Instantly, you know, whopper, 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 whopper. And it's just like, oh man.
Yes, yes. It was a serious Fansville by Dr. Pepper, and they're all just laughing away, like, oh, our coach choked away the season, or maybe they'll play a commercial and be like, oh no, our season's over because he got injured. How timely would that be? Let's finish up here with the AAC. Tulane, remember when Tulane was a punchline?
I do.
Like, Matt, they had a couple of good years with Matt Forte, and then just consistently bad, 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 bad. But this is a really good...
I'm guessing it's happened before. I'm not going to pull up their list of seasons on Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
But their last 3 years, they've gone 12-2, 11-3, and 9-5. I would imagine it's been long enough ago that they probably were in the SEC the last time Tulane had three consecutive seasons with 9 wins or more.
And remember they beat USC in the Cotton Bowl that year? That was great.
That was a fun team.
It was very wild here. Memphis is normally good, but they're adjusting at quarterback, so I don't think they're going to be that good. This is a very average conference at best, but it's very weird to say that the best quarterback in the conference returning for the following year is at Navy, and that's Blake Horvath. And that is why, in large part, plus the military academies routinely are pretty good. I know when Navy, like, if Navy's down, then Army's up. If Army's down, then Navy is consistently good. It, last year was the rare year where both teams were really, really good, and that made the
combined to go 22-5 last year.
That's pretty good, and that made that last game of the season so much fun. But for Blake Horvath to be the best quarterback in this conference, arguably, I just think that's going to help Navy ascend to the top here. I have Navy winning the AAC. I have them beating UTSA, Tulane finishing third in the conference.
You don't think Memphis relying on a transfer from always great at quarterback producing school, Nevada, is going to be good enough to get them to go to the conference title game?
Well, name me another good quarterback from Nevada other than Colin Kaepernick.
I can't name any.
Yeah, I can't either. So, I mean, Nate Burleson went there, but he was a wide receiver. So that doesn't help at all. I think Tulane's going to be good, but they have some quarterback questions as well, and they lost some good guys on both sides of the ball. So give me Navy over UTSA.
Okay, I am quickly checking the schedule here because I heard that and I'm gonna completely shift what I was gonna say.
Oh, I don't want to make like change. If you have,
is gonna be to be more fun. Okay, I mean, if we can't have fun with the mid-major conferences, what are we doing here?
Right. Yep.
You picked Navy. I'm gonna go with Tulane and Army in the AAC title game.
There we go. All right.
We'll be like, you know what? We lost our starting quarterback. But what armed service is better at filling its numbers every year than the United States Army?
That's very true. That is very true.
He doesn't pass well. They're like, we're Army, it does not matter. We're going to throw it 74 times all season. You know, actually, I should look up. I know their quarterback graduated. I guess he threw it more than 74. He threw it 103 times last year.
Daily, yeah, he was really good. And that's one of the reasons why Army was so good, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I'm picking Navy and Horvath to win. You know, they always play against one another, Navy and Army, and then, of course, Air Force gets in the mix, too. Navy plays they open the season against VMI, the Virginia Military Institute. I think VMI should factor into this Commander-in-Chief trophy as well. Even though they're not a specific branch of the military, the fact that they have
why don't we just change that? Should the VMI, should that be where the Marines go or the Coast Guard goes?
I
don't know where. Well, I mean, I know where Virginia is. I don't know where VMI is in Virginia. Right. If it's near the sea, I'd be like, well, I mean, I feel like that should be the Marines then, or the Coast Guard. Either way works.
I just feel like the fact that it has VMI, it's got to be Virginia Marine Institute then.
There we go. I think we just figured that out right there.
Yes.
And let's be honest, I'm not saying the Coast Guard isn't important. When anyone's like, hey, list the branches of the military, nobody thinks about the Coast Guard right away. So I know I'm not an expert, but I'm pretty sure the Marines are the smallest of the four major ones. They should have one, though. So, yeah, we just did that, and now we've got the real Commander-in-Chief trophy.
They have to play all four of those teams should play every year round robin. I mean, just makes sense. So,
and if there's some weird tie, well, I mean, they don't play each other, but if we get a four-way tie, then they are like, you know what, you're each playing each other in a bowl game somehow, too.
Yes.
Assuming they don't make the playoff.
I'm checking Air Force right now, and they do not play VMI. Only Navy is playing VMI this year.
I mean, how come Army and Air Force are ducking VMI? I think that's the real question.
I think so, too. I kind of chicken. Navy doing it right. And that's why they're winning.
I mean, we've always said, you and I have always said, Stacken, that Navy is the bravest branch of our armed forces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I have to laugh as I say that, so anyone listening, just in case they, for some reason, thought I was serious in saying that. No, I'm being facetious.
Oh, you know how many people in the Air Force are listening to this, and they just got upset, or Army?
They're like, that's it! I'm watching Top Gun Maverick, and I'm rejoining the Air Force again! Actually, that doesn't work. Technically, they're Navy pilots in Top Gun, yeah. But...
I mean... So we respect and we appreciate all of our armed forces for their dedication and service to our country and defending our defending us. But I'm still taking Navy to win the American and playing all of the military schools. There we go.
I've got Tulane in Army, but I've got Tulane winning it, so I'm not going with Army winning it.
Wave of emotions. I think a wave of emotion will flow over them if they win.
I like that. Well done, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anything else we need to get to this week before we say so long and I let you get back to your vacation?
Two other things. Yep. I remember thinking about this before we talked last week, but forgot to bring it up. These are like college football things, but like adjacent to our normal conversations.
Yes.
Two things maybe worthy of checking out. One, I mean, both modern in terms of like they came out recently, but one's from a while ago, one's recent. If you've ever watched like Drive to Survive on Netflix or the one on like the golfers or quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and are like, hey, how come they don't do a college football one? Well, they've got one on the SEC now, and it's the SEC from last year. There are a few schools that didn't, like, participate in it, so they're not – and I should say I've not watched all of it. I haven't finished it yet, but it's interesting. I don't think, like, Georgia and Alabama and Texas and a few others are, like, really doing it. But, like, of the big-name schools, Florida and LSU are both doing it. Like, you see, like, behind-the-scenes stuff.
Okay.
You know, that's fun and interesting to watch. So just if you've watched those other Netflix shows that are the sports ones and are like, wow, that's interesting. I want college football to do this. Like, I think that they've got one, and I bet they do this going forward a lot. In fact, enough so that I think it would be fun if they were like, actually, let's do one for all of the Power Four conferences.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pac-12's going to come back, too. You're going to have to factor them in as well.
That's true. And you know what? Then that can be their deal to getting back, is that they're going to be on Netflix then, too.
Works for
me.
And
then the other one is a book I'm reading, on the flight there and flight back and in general. Mm-hmm. It is written by Buzz Bissinger. And if anyone's like, that name sounds familiar, that's the guy who wrote the book Friday Night Lights.
Okay.
Not the TV show, but the book that then became the movie, and then the TV show's unrelated. But it is called The Mosquito Bowl. Ooh. And it is basically, like, long story short, this is like the kind of Cliff Notes version. And I should say I'm only halfway through it, but...
Can I just ask a question quick? Is The Mosquito Bowl sponsored by Off?
I don't think so, but basically... Like, as you probably know or are aware, or many listeners are aware, you know, like, famously, I think Ted Williams during World War II, like, fought and was a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there were a lot of other athletes that, you know, were in the military to some degree. You know, some fought, some were more like promotional things. But basically, the Mosquito Bowl is about, like, two different regiments of Marines. That there were a bunch that were like, oh, these guys played college football or played in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You know, the NFL was much different during World War II and not the big deal it is now. College football was still bigger then. But that just by happenstance, these two regiments were just loaded with all these guys that had played college football. And basically, like, in the middle of, like, fighting Japan in the Pacific Theater during World War II, they were like, hey, what if we just have a game between these two regiments that have all these All-Americans from, you know, like, Notre Dame and Wisconsin and Purdue and all these other places? And I'm like, what happens with that? And basically, I've gotten to the point where they play the game, and it's only halfway through, because the sad part is apparently, like, a third of the guys who played in that game died in combat after that. But it is not fiction. It's, like, a real – this really happened. And it's just an interesting book, seeing all these guys that are just like, yeah, I was in this one. And then and also reading that so much was like, oh, hey, let's have these guys play college football, but like, oh, actually, we're going to like do Army stuff on this college campus to help train for war. And mm-hmm. then they're like, oh, hey, all these guys that were at these other colleges, like, actually just transferred to this school and are playing there now. That's weird. And you're like, well, then you couldn't do that before. And you're like, you're right. You couldn't do that for a lot of years. It was a weird thing. And there's a lot of like, oh, man, college football's changed. And even reading this, there's a lot of like, oh, yeah, we think some of these things have changed and some of them are, you know, still the same. I'm like, oh, that's weird that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, all yeah. these guys went to Purdue because they had a training thing for Marines at Purdue. So Purdue was terrible. And then one year they got this influx of all these All-Americans. And it was fantastic.
Interesting.
And that's also how Army and Navy had, like, Army had, like, the greatest team of all time.
Yes, yes.
Because it was just like, yeah, we got all these guys that are just like, oh, hey, we got All-Americans from, like, 12 different schools to come here. And we were already good in the first place.
That is fascinating. I might have to check this book out.
And like I said, I'm only halfway through, but it's really interesting so far. And I've not read ahead. I'm sure some of these people that they talk a lot about, it's going to be like, oh my God, that's so sad. This guy died, mm-hmm. you know, in Okinawa or whatever. Yeah. I'm hoping that, you know, selfishly, you know, that all the guys that they focus on more will live. We'll see. I'm not that far yet, but.
Well, keep
and I'm not going to tell you what happens okay. in the game.
Okay.
The game is, you know, there's a lot of buildup to it, and the game's only one chapter, but it's still interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting, you know, it's an important point in American history, and there's so many spin-off stories from that. It's just like, wow, this really happened? That's actually pretty wild.
Well, yeah, it's something that during a very historic chapter in America's history that we don't know about. And these are the fun, or the very interesting things that come out of that, those stories. So yeah, that's really fascinating here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
again, anyone listening, if you forgot the name and are interested, it is The Mosquito Bowl by Buzz Bissinger, the guy who wrote Friday Night Lights. And I'm opening up to see what year it came out. I know it wasn't that long ago. It was 2022. So the book's only been out. I mean, it's been out for a couple or for 3 years, but not mm-hmm. that long. This is even though it's from an event that's, you know, roughly 80 years ago, the book is relatively new still.
Very good. Well, enjoy the rest of your book, but more importantly, enjoy the rest of your vacation. Thank you for taking the time, my friend, and we'll chat next week to wrap up our the conference preview before we get into our to prediction time. But thank you. Enjoy the rest of Big Ten country, and we'll talk next week, my friend.
All right. Sounds good. Can't wait, Stackin.
All right. Thank you, Charlie.
Yep, thanks.
Charlie Hildebrand on his vacation, and we appreciate his time as always there. Great stuff. Yeah, a little fascinating year on the SEC. I feel it's a little weaker this year. Maybe the Big Ten a little stronger. Oh, it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. Could Liberty get in? I hope not. But we'll figure that out another time. We're going to wrap up this week's edition of the Sports Block Podcast. Well, that does wrap up this week's edition of the Sports Block Podcast. You can find us available on podcast.com or Spotify. Follow me on Twitter at Andy Stackin, Facebook Nathan Stackin, Charlie Hildebrand on Twitter at CE Hildebrand, Travis on Twitter at Travis Crins. A link to the podcast posted middle to later part of each week. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week. Joy, and we got NFL preseason on if you're into that. It's still a baseball, but college football is ramping up here, and we're looking forward to that and very excited. So for all of us here at the Sports Block Podcast, for Travis and Charlie, I'm Nathan. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week on another edition of the Sports Block Podcast.